What's up, everyone? This is Liberty at Night with Nate and Charlie on the Free Talk Live Network coming at you from Nashville, Tennessee. Supreme Court is keeping Trump on the ballot, rejecting Colorado voter challenge. By the way, this was a 9-0 decision. Even the liberal court, leftist court justices ruled that Trump must remain on the ballot, although they did have some disagreements on the overall opinion. They agreed that he must remain on the ballot. We'll go through a few of these things. I pulled a few cuts from this decision. This just came out at 9. It's currently 9:36. It's a 20-page thing, so I tried to read through it real quick and take a few screenshots that I thought were important. They said, this case raises the question whether the states, in addition to Congress, may also enforce Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. We conclude that states may disqualify persons holding or attempting to hold state office, but states have no power under the Constitution to enforce Section 3 with respect to federal offices, especially the presidency. Such power over governance, however, does not extend to federal office holders and candidates because federal offices, quote, owe their existence and functions to the united voice of the whole, not a portion of the people. Powers over their election and qualifications must be specifically delegated to rather than reserved by the states. The respondents nonetheless maintain states may enforce Section 3, this is Colorado, against candidates for federal office, but the text of the 14th Amendment on its face does not affirmatively delegate such a power to the states. The terms of the 14th Amendment speak only to enforcement by Congress, which enjoys power to enforce the amendment through legislation pursuant to Section 5. And essentially, the majority ruled that if Congress hasn't made a law, which would be Section 5 in this, to enforce, say, Section 3, then this isn't something that was just automatically going to trigger, that Colorado wasn't able to do this. They go on to say, this can hardly come as a surprise, given that the substantive provisions of the amendment embody significant limitations on state authority. If you think about other things with the 14th Amendment and what it has been used for in the past, under the amendment, states cannot abridge privileges or immunities, deprive persons of life, liberty, or property without due process, deny equal protection, or deny male inhabitants the right to vote. On the other hand, the 14th Amendment grants new power to Congress to enforce provisions of the amendment against the states. It would be incongruous to read this particular amendment as granting the states the power, silently no less, to disqualify a candidate for federal office. For the reasons given, responsibility for enforcing Section 3 against federal office holders and candidates rests with Congress and not the states. The judgment of the Colorado Supreme Court therefore cannot stand. All 9 members of the court agree with this result. It is rare to get a 9-0 decision. I am glad that it's 9-0 because that's going to, well, it's not really going to quiet certain people, but there are some people out there that have been working on the overall narrative that the Supreme Court is corrupt. And, you know, Trump put 3 of these people in there and they're bought and paid for, Clarence Thomas specifically. But when you get a 9-0 opinion and you see even the left-leaning Supreme Court justices agreeing on this, that can help make this, I don't know, less contentious, I would say, among the public. Big news over the weekend if you're a Nikki Haley fan. Just a big one. Nikki Haley won Washington, D.C.'s Republican primary. She got her first victory in the primary. I believe it was something in the 60s% versus 30s%. So she just totally walloped Trump in the D.C. primary. It was kind of funny to see people on the left talking about how this was a big win. Like this guy, no lie, with Brian Tyler Cohen. He said, wow, Nikki Haley just won her first primary, defeating Trump by a massive 30-point margin, 63-33 in D.C. This is going to send Trump into a meltdown. I don't think Brian Tyler Cohen understands that this was actually a good thing. This is a winning talking point for Trump. This doesn't say anything about how Nikki Haley is going to come from behind and win this victory or anything like that. This doesn't mean that Trump is going to go into a meltdown or that there's going to be an insurrection happening, nothing like that. Winning in Washington, D.C. is actually kind of proof of concept for what Trump supporters would be saying about Nikki Haley and what everyone would be saying about Nikki Haley, and that she is loved by the lobbyists and the establishment politicians, by the defense contractors, by just think of all the people who live in Washington, D.C. and who would be voting in that primary, and the people that they work for, and the entire reason that their jobs are there and who they work for and why they live there. Those people go and vote and they pick Nikki Haley over Trump. That is actually a pretty good argument for why you should not like Nikki Haley. And that is exactly the argument that Trump and his supporters are going to be going with. If Trump would have won D.C., I would have been, I don't know, concerned about that. Not that I'm about to vote for Trump or anything. But if he would have won that, that would have been bad for Trump. Actually, the best thing they could have done was to try and find a way that Donald Trump would have won D.C. But he didn't. Nikki Haley won it. Now, let's get into other news that came out over the weekend. Interesting article from CNBC. Terrifying article, really, from CNBC. I just want to make sure that we mention this because these things are important. The U.S. national debt is rising by $1 trillion about every 100 days right now. My biggest fear is that that's actually going to speed up. Like if your measurement is $1 trillion, that this is actually going to speed up and it's going to be every 90 days, every 80 days, every 70 days. And of course, as the debt gets bigger and bigger and we spend more and more money, a trillion becomes like when we would talk about 100 billion, something like that. But when you look at the chart of the national debt, just going up like crazy, it's a little bit scary. And I just want to remind people that eventually we're going to have to deal with this. I just talked about how Nikki Haley is clearly not going to be the nominee. She's clearly not going to be the president. She has one thing that she says we need to take care of, and it's something that Trump has made advertisements to call her out on, and that's that she says we need to have entitlement reform. We need to do something with Social Security and Medicare, and that is true. We are going to have to do something about that, and I hope that Republicans will eventually come around on that, but more than likely they won't. Politicians don't like to talk about those things because it typically means that you're going to lose your job. I wanted to talk about this epic community note on Elizabeth Warren over the weekend. According to research from the Federal Reserve, corporate profits accounted for all of inflation from around July 2020 to July 2021. And 41% of all inflation from around July 2020 to July 2022. So when you widen it out to 2 years, 41% of all inflation. That would be less than half, by the way. She says, we must tackle corporate price gouging head on. I'm staying in that fight. She doesn't give any links. She doesn't cite her sources on this. She just says that the Federal Reserve says that corporate profits accounted for all inflation. So she gets this really good community note that says, actually, the Federal Reserve said that this is linked to all the U.S. government stimulus packages. Even corporate profits are linked to all of the U.S. government's stimulus packages. And this is a way that we haven't actually talked about it when it comes to corporate profits. Something that we didn't account for in the way that we talked about it was, why would the profits go up so much? Well, we talk about all the money printing and all the extra money that people had to buy things. And of course, they increased their prices because there's more money in circulation in the economy. What the Federal Reserve actually points to is that so much of the stimulus went to businesses that it, in effect, decreased all of these businesses' costs. And so when you see people showing these charts that say, oh, look how much corporate profits just spiked right here. But what about the government programs that subsidized the actual cost for businesses during the pandemic and directly after the pandemic and made it cheaper for them to operate? Yeah, their profits went up. You subsidized their costs for them. Reading a little bit from this, it says, our analysis shows that much of the increase in aggregate profit margins following the COVID-19 pandemic can be attributed to, one, the unprecedented, this is from the Federal Reserve, the unprecedented large and direct government intervention to support U.S. small and medium-sized businesses, and two, a large reduction in net interest expenses due to monetary policy. Once we adjust for fiscal and monetary interventions, the behavior of profit margins appears much less noticeable. And by the end of 2022, they're essentially back at their pre-pandemic levels. Given the effect of government intervention on the overall profit margins, we highlight a different measure of corporate profitability. They calculate the non-financial corporate net capital share. Now, what that means is when the money comes into the business and they pay all their expenses and all that. How much of the money is capital keeping? This is something that like left-wing economists, people would talk about, well, how much is capital keeping? How much is labor keeping? You know, what portion are they actually keeping themselves? What you've actually seen is that number is down and has not gone back over its highs since the pandemic. So we'll talk about that here in a sec. Now, this is the chart you'll see. You'll see like Robert Reich or even Elizabeth Warren or someone post out the corporate profit margins. And what you see is the profit margins going up over 15% and spiking all the way up to like 18, 19%. And then right now they're actually coming back down to around 15%, which is the number they were in 2007 and 8 and 2012 and 13. Like, it's a margin that we've all lived through before. We've been able to live through this before without massive inflation. So that's one thing they try to point out. They say, why do we observe such large increase in profit margins? Because of the COVID-19 pandemic, there was unprecedented support for U.S. businesses via the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, which is CARES, the Paycheck Protection Program and Healthcare Enhancement Act of 2020, the American Rescue Plan Act of 2021. These programs greatly increased the subsidy component of non-labor costs, thus providing a large boost to corporate profits. And I'm surprised it's something that we hadn't seen anyone write about before, or that we hadn't talked about, or that I hadn't even thought about, that when you look at the profit margins, well, how much stimulus, how much subsidy did these businesses get? Those subsidies going towards their costs of operating their businesses, of course their margins went up afterwards. And that's what the Federal Reserve is showing. When they talk about the government component of expenses, say taxes and government operation expenses, they show that dropping drastically immediately during and after the pandemic, and they line that up perfectly with the subsidies that were given out to businesses, showing that, yeah, subsidies decrease the costs for these businesses. When you look at their interest going down, of course, interest rates went down a bunch during this to try and stimulate the economy. So the interest rate goes down a bunch. They show where it would have been if this pandemic wouldn't have happened, and what happened when the interest rates went down. That made it cheaper for the businesses to operate. And then they give you an adjusted profit margin showing that really it barely got any higher than it was back in 2007 or 8 or 12 or 13 or whatever. It would have kind of hovered around that line if not for the government giving these companies a bunch of money to offset their costs of being a company, if not shutting down the economy because of the coronavirus pandemic. Now, are people like Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders and Robert Reich, any of these people going to bring up any of those charts? Are they going to talk about how actually the corporate profits went up because we, the government, stole money from you and we used it to subsidize the costs for these businesses? No, they're not going to do that because it doesn't fit their narrative. And conveniently enough, their narrative always leads to them having more power and money. That's always what their narrative leads to. It kind of makes you want to ask, is there some kind of motive behind that that they're not wanting to tell you about? When it comes to net capital share, remember I was telling you, well, people like to look at, you take out all these expenses, stuff like that. What is capital keeping? That's like the people who own the business, all the shareholders, all, what are they keeping? And then, you know, what goes out to the workers and stuff like that. So they call this net capital share. And what you actually see here is that prior to the pandemic, and actually a decade prior to the pandemic, that number was up around 28% of what capital, they call it capital, was one of the capitalists were keeping. That's a good way of thinking about it. It hovered kind of around 27, 28%. And it dropped all the way down to about 19%. And then it popped back up, but it popped back up to 26, 27%. It never got back over the highs that it was at around 2013, 2014, stuff like that. So no, these people are not raking in a bigger portion of the money than they were beforehand. In fact, right now, they're raking in a smaller portion of the money than they were beforehand. Are they going to show you this chart from the Federal Reserve showing that actually they're taking in a smaller amount of the money? Capital is taking in a smaller amount of the money than they were even before the pandemic, than they were in the decades before the pandemic? No, they're not going to show you that. Luckily, Community Notes put this out there. They say, to summarize, the profit margin dynamics in the aftermath of COVID-19 is heavily affected by unprecedented government intervention, which contributed to a substantial increase in profit margins adjusted for their own capital consumption. When we focus on the net capital share, which is what we were just talking about, which was not directly affected by the government intervention, we do see a rebound in profitability after a sharp collapse, but this rebound does not look historically abnormal, and it doesn't go over the numbers that we were at back in 2013 and 2014. The other thing that they show you, and then we'll be done talking about this, because this whole, you gotta realize why this is important, why this is so important to Charlie and I when we talk about this. They use these arguments, people like Elizabeth Warren use these arguments to argue for more government intervention in the economy. Government intervention in the economy is actually what caused the increased profit margins in the first place. And corporations benefit largely from government intervention in the economy if they have the right friends, helping them write laws, you know. We don't agree with that. It should all be done freely and voluntarily. They use these arguments to argue for more government intervention in the economy. They also use it to make their fans, their supporters, their followers hate people who create things. They want to hate the capitalists, hate the business owners. And any problem that you have in your life, well, it's not the government who caused this. It's not our fault. Don't look at us. We didn't do this to you. We're the ones who were trying to help you. We're the ones who were trying to fix this problem. It's actually them who have caused all of your problems. Don't look at us spending way more money than we have. Don't look at us printing way more money than we've ever printed in the history of our country. Don't look at that stuff. That's not what it is. It's just simply that these corporations are just raising their prices on their goods and that they're just taking in more money than they've ever taken in. And that is actually the foundation of all of your problems. That is where they all stem from. And so us, your elected public servants, should come in and have more power and more of your money so we can try and solve this problem. Another thing they show before we get out of here is the corporate profit margins, and they go from 2010 to 2023-ish is what this chart is showing. And they just kind of show you what the margins are. They separate this out between large firms, the largest firms, and then large firms, and then medium firms. So really, really big companies, and then big companies, and then medium-sized companies. The smaller ones are not on here. What they show you is the profit margins that they typically make. And the important part about this is that there's a trend line from 2010 up to almost now. And what you see is we didn't deviate from that trend line. We're still wiggling around that trend line. We're not living in some type of a novel time in a situation that we've never dealt with before. We're actually still staying around that trend line, except for when you get to things like the medium-sized firms, which is like most of them are small. Then you have a really large portion that would be considered medium-sized firms. You have a very small portion of companies that would be the largest firms out there. And they do things that don't even really affect you in the first place. Like, okay, who cares if Facebook's profit margins have gone up a bunch? Do you pay money for Facebook? Is that something you do? No, not really. Okay, Apple, yeah, sure, we pay for our phones. You know, Microsoft, sure, you pay for some stuff from Microsoft or whatever. Google, do you pay for a lot from them? Not really a whole lot. And like, those are some of your biggest companies. They would be in the largest firms. And they make money in ways that don't even directly affect you when they change their prices or that they have bigger margins. It's the medium-sized firms that actually affect more of your day-to-day and things that you pay for on a daily basis. And what you actually see on these trend lines is medium-sized firms, their profit margins have been going down quite a lot, and they dropped a bunch during COVID, clearly, because they weren't allowed to operate, and they really haven't recovered. They stayed down below that trend line the whole time. And so there's basically, it's pretty cool to see the Federal Reserve not finding any evidence to back up this idea that corporate profit margins are driving inflation, or in this case specifically, that corporate profit margins are anything outside of the norm that we were already dealing with before. The only big thing that changed was all of the government intervention in the economy. Their conclusion is that corporate profit margins were not abnormally high in the aftermath of the COVID-19 pandemic, once you account for the fiscal and monetary interventions that the government did. This conclusion is supported by the behavior of the net capital share, the amount that the capitalists are keeping versus like the workers, stuff like that, which remain well below its historical high levels. It is still below its historic, it is still below its levels from 2013, 2014. And firm level profit margins, those are those different size companies we were just talking about across different categories, have behaved broadly in line with their pre-COVID trends. If there is any anomaly to note, it should be that the aftermath of the COVID-19 pandemic has been characterized by persistent weakness in profitability for the middle-sized publicly traded firms. I just say the important part, once again, is why are they preaching this narrative to you? Why do they want you to give them more power? And what are they going to do with that power? And we look at things like this and we see that it's actually already the government that has created a bunch of these problems. And so what should you be looking for as a solution to this? The best thing you could have a solution for this is that the government stops spending more money than it has so it can stop printing more money than it's ever printed, so we can stop devaluing our currency by putting more money in the circulation and thus leading to higher prices for all of our goods and services. Like, that's where the actual problem starts. That's even where the actual jump in corporate profits came from, was from that money printing. And we're getting that from the money printers. More to come on Free Talk Live.
The crimes of the state. Eleutheromania. The insatiable desire for freedom. The crimes of the state from K through 12th grade. They're taught to hope. It's the new three-song heavy metal EP from Captain Kickass. Through 12th grade, they're taught to open. Available now on your favorite music app or get it directly from CaptainKickass.com.
What's up, everyone, all of our liberty-loving friends? This is another fantastic episode of Liberty at Night with Nate and Charlie on the Free Talk Live Network, coming at you from the great Nashville, Tennessee. Chuck's not here, but I am joined by Mr. David McGarry, who's a policy analyst at the Taxpayers Protection Alliance and a contributor for Young Voices. David, how you doing?
I am doing splendid, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's been a little bit now since you've been on the show. I hope everything's been going well for you. We haven't heard from you in a few months at least, so it's good. Good to hear from you.
I don't want to surprise you, but the federal government is doing lots of bad things that have been keeping me busy writing about. So,
what really?
Life is good on this.
I didn't think that was going to happen anymore. I thought that there was a law or a Supreme Court case said the government couldn't do bad things anymore. We were planning on shutting down. But I guess instead, let's talk about some of the bad things that they're doing. You've got a new piece out that I was reading up on earlier. It's called Industrial Policy Indignities. Of course, I thought it was pretty great because I'm not a big fan of protectionism and subsidies and tariffs and things like that. So why don't you give everyone the kind of brief summary of what this piece is about?
There is a new bipartisan and fairly odd intellectual coalition that favors robust industrial policy. This includes subsidies for manufacturing. This includes protective tariffs to keep all the bad, spooky foreign imports out of the country. obviously, Donald Trump has said that he wants to erect a 10% tariff barrier on all imports, because apparently we're just bringing back the very worst of the 1870s economic ideas. And something that they say in these corners of Twitter over and over again is that America doesn't make things anymore, and that is just as a matter of economics and as a matter of fact, that's simply false. If you go and you look at the data, American manufacturing is very productive, but it looks a little bit different in this country than, say, it looks in China. American workers, because of both the workers themselves and also the capital that they have access to, the technologies they have access to, are the most productive in the world. And so we're able to turn out more goods using less labor. And the case that I make in the piece that you referenced is that human capital is actually the most precious commodity that we have. And to enact an industrial policy that wastes human capital in some attempt to reconfigure the economy to look more like the 1950s or 1960s union paradise is incredibly foolish. And anybody who actually cares about the workers themselves and what is good for manufacturing communities and manufacturing employees should stay far away from anything that smells like it.
Well, let's talk about the tariffs thing first. I mean, what's wrong with making China pay a tariff?
Well, that's a very good question, but unfortunately, and you know, all of your economically familiar listeners can say it with me: domestic consumers pay the cost of tariffs. If you excuse me, if you raise the price on some Chinese import, the people who pay the cost of that tariff are going to be American consumers. This has been proved definitively over and over. And one instance I would point to is if you look at Trump's tariffs on China, what he did was he did great damage to the agricultural sector. And did he reverse his tariff schedules after seeing what he had wrought? No, he just went to the farm bill and subsidized farmers more to make up for the money that he had cost them.
Are we still doing that right now?
Oh yes, we are. And it's this. Speaking of this, the bipartisan nature of this coalition, Joe Biden has largely kept Donald Trump's tariffs. They have even both presidents have even gone so far as to remove the World Trade Organization's abilities to rein in American malfeasance. And this isn't an instance of some multinational governing body coming in and taking away America's national sovereignty. We have agreed to certain trade provisions with other countries to facilitate freer flows of goods, and then we have completely thrown them by the wayside. And then we went to the body that is in charge of enforcing all of this, and we basically neutered its ability to enforce or to hold us accountable for our own bad behavior.
But if we, if we put tariffs on other countries, and we'll just use we'll just use China, and I know the tariffs are paid by consumers. I mean, doesn't that mean those things go up in price, and that means people will just decide to make those products in the United States, and therefore we'll have more jobs, and that is better for everyone. We won't actually have to pay those high tariff/taxes. We'll just make things here instead, and that'll be better for everyone in America. Isn't that how it goes?
In certain corners of Twitter, that is the story that they tell. No, so whenever you have a tariff good, American consumers, or excuse me, American manufacturers who jump in to make, say, I don't know, say it's some steel product, right? The American manufacturers that come in to fulfill that need, they're not selling at whatever low price that that the Chinese manufacturer was selling at. And you know this because had they been selling at that low price, consumers most likely would have been buying from the Americans because it would have eliminated the whole complicated network of shipping and whatnot. So protected industries, when the domestic producers start producing, they're still producing products at that higher price, and American consumers are still paying. And it's not just American consumers; it's also downstream manufacturers. So, for example, if you, I don't know, but to stick with our 19th century theme, if you were to tariff raw wool, some of the people who you are harming the most are the American manufacturers of cloth products. because now all of the material that they need to source to make, say, a shirt or to make jackets or whatever garment, all of those inputs are now sky high in price. And we've seen, and again, looking at the history of Trump's tariffs, we've seen the huge chaos that this wreaks in American manufacturing.
And so to fix that, to offset those costs, the government wants to come in and subsidize people who are experiencing higher prices for some of these goods. What's wrong with that?
Well, at this point, there is such a knock-on chain of inefficiency and corruption and misallocation of resources that we don't really have time to get through all of it. But time and time again, in protected industries, we see that when government softens competitive pressures on businesses, those businesses do not perform at their best. They do not work as efficiently and as sharply as they could. They don't innovate in the way that they could, because they know that the government is backing them up. This is part of the problem, honestly, in any regulated and subsidized industry. And again, the losers in all of this become the consumers and become any American business that relies on the protected industry.
One of the things I like that you talked about in the piece was human capital and wasted human capital. And then also you talked about worker dignity. People have mentioned that this would help bolster worker dignity, but of course you call it an indignity. And why is that?
There's a weird assumption that the ultimate pinnacle of worker dignity is some 1950s union worker who is in a steel mill making things like a man. And I'm sure you can insert whatever aesthetic adjectives you can think of into the conversation. But I would say that a worker whose job only exists because the government has essentially forced industry to be to work inefficiently, and a worker whose job only exists because the state has centrally planned it to be so, that's welfare. That is an undignified position for that worker to be in. And even if in the modern economy, the quote unquote modern manufacturing worker is someone who sits at a computer or sits at a desk, I don't think personally that takes away from the dignity. If the dignity of the worker, if that worker is doing the very best work that he can given his circumstances and his employer's circumstances, especially if that worker is being as productive as he can and providing the most value and the most benefits to those around him.
Yeah, so I think one of the great things about your argument on the wasted human capital, kind of piggybacking off of that, is that people should be doing whatever the most productive thing is for them. And by subsidizing or putting tariffs or trying to control the manufacturing sector, you just don't get that peak efficiency that you would be getting. While someone is maybe working in a subsidized plant that wouldn't exist if it weren't for the subsidies, and they have that job, well, they could actually be working somewhere else where their labor was actually needed, creating the better use of our resources the whole time. And that seems like a better plan for me, but what a lot of people would go to, let's say for some reason they're still like a Trump supporter listening to us right now, they made it this far in, they couldn't find the skip button or whatever. So let's say that they're still listening right now. If we don't do these things for the manufacturing sector, won't all of these companies just move overseas and there won't be any jobs left in America? They'll just all be in China?
Well, no, because since we've seen farmers lose jobs to newfangled technologies like tractors and plows, and we've seen those who drive buggies go out of business because of these, you know, newfangled horseless carriages, society and businesses and the economy at large find ways to repurpose people. Again, a lot of my argument goes back to my fundamental premise that people are a economically important and an economically valuable resource, that something about humanity, something in the nature of the person, it can provide incredible value and can create value and can make everyone wealthy, everyone wealthy in a community or in a country or even in the world, now that we have international supply chains. Or I should say, now that we have more robust international supply chains. So a lot of my argument goes back to this view of people as inherently productive. And it's slightly odd that a lot of the pro-industrial policy advocates, especially on the right, who in other contexts sort of position themselves as the defenders of worker dignity or the defender of like a traditional more traditional concepts of like the nature of man and his relationship with work. It's odd to see those folks miss something so fundamental about how economics and human action actually function.
I actually thought of just asking you the first serious question that I've asked you the whole time, because if you can't tell, I've been being sarcastic and playing devil's advocate this whole time. But no, I was thinking about, okay, we go through the pandemic and we have all these problems with supply chains and we get a lot of things from other countries. This has been maybe one of the best arguments that I've heard, that it would actually be beneficial for people in the U.S. to for us to be buying things that are made here. So we're not worried about things getting shipped from overseas. We're not at risk of China cutting us off or anyone else cutting us off. What about that side of the argument? It sounds like a little bit, I don't know, closer to a real world argument, in my opinion.
Well, first of all, you say you're joking, but I'm gonna choose to interpret it as Good Morning Liberty's latent command and controlism coming out. The data simply show that more diversified supply chains are actually more robust, because take the example of the baby formula shortage. So there's massive protectionism that basically makes us overly reliant on domestically produced baby formula. What happens when that domestically produced baby formula feels a supply shock? What happens when if something goes wrong at a factory? Well, we saw there's a massive shortage and it becomes a months-long national news story. And actually, how was that? I'd point out how that shortage was actually dealt with was that the federal government lowered barriers to importing foreign baby formula. Did anyone die? No. And it really just demonstrated how the protectionist argument of absent concerns such as national security, which add a different dynamic to this, but the basic protectionist argument that domestically sourced supply chains are more robust and safer is just completely disconnected from reality.
And so I guess a solution was going to be the last thing I was going to ask about this, which is, companies do move their manufacturing overseas a lot of times because it's too expensive to manufacture things here. Or maybe people are specialized, they do a better job in some of the locations they're going to. But what could we actually be pushing for that would organically grow our manufacturing sector, if that's a thing we decided was necessary? What steps could we actually take to truly solve the problem other than taxing people and subsidizing other people?
Yeah, well, quickly, I just note that a lot of jobs from the Rust Belt haven't actually decamped to Mexico or China or whatnot. They've gone to southern states with friendlier regulatory climates and friendlier business environments. It's another weird thing. All of these industrial policy folks, they love unions. And they, at the same time, will tell you how terrible it is that nobody wants to operate a factory in Pennsylvania anymore, or that Detroit is cratering. It's like, well, look at the history. Maybe your support for unions is actually causing the things that you say is the downfall of, American culture and the American economy and most everything else. In terms of good reforms, the government can do many, many things to remove barriers to workers' ability to freely pursue their careers in whatever manner they see fit. Whether this is removing barriers to people moving between states, if it's reducing barriers just to people getting certified or licensed to work in various industries, getting rid of distortionary policies that tie people's health insurance to their employment. There's all sorts of ways, again, that the government, simply by removing itself from the equation, can really unburden individuals and empower them to use their productive capacity, their natural productive capacity, to the utmost, and really carve out wonderful and meaningful and fulfilling lives for themselves.
There you go, David. You passed. I tried to give you all the questions I thought you would get on Fox News or something like that. So, you know, you did a great job with all of those hard-hitting questions, serious questions for sure. I truly was wondering about all of those things. What are you working on? Anything else that we need to know about right now?
I haven't written anything about it. I would just flag for everybody the oral arguments at the Supreme Court yesterday in the net choice cases. I'm sure you've talked about this at some point in the last few months, but the Supreme Court's essentially deciding whether or not social media platforms have a First Amendment right to exercise editorial discretion and to moderate what content goes on their sites. And if you look at the case law and if you look at the facts on the ground, I think the argument is pretty clearly yes. But there's a lot of folks out there who are making very disingenuous arguments that would do a lot of damage to free speech online, both for platforms and also, to be frank, for users as well. I think there's a lot of unintended consequences that would occur if the Supreme Court rules the wrong way in this one. So I would just encourage everybody, including your one Trump supporter who's still sticking around, to check out those cases.
Do you have a second for me to ask you a couple things about that? Because I listened to all of the oral arguments today, and I found that pretty interesting, but I had a couple questions for you to see what you think. I haven't talked to anyone about this yet. How are they going to be able to...
My condolences, by the way.
What's up?
My condolences, by the way. I'm sitting through.
I found them pretty interesting, I guess, although I don't think any of them really made any compelling arguments that really resonated with me today. But I was going to ask how they keep Section 230 protections and also say that Facebook has editorial discretion. At the same, my worry here, because I don't think Facebook should be held liable for things that people say on their platform. I think that that would be terrible for free speech, actually. That would be a huge negative for all of us who say, terrible, divisive things on the internet all the time. And at the same time, I think they have the right to put or not put whoever they want on their platforms and decide who uses, even though we've been a victim of some of their censorship from time to time. Of course, I still think that it's their private property, it's their business, and they can do it as long as the government's not telling them to do it, which is a separate case. I think a lot of people are combining these two things.
Yes, sir.
This is a separate case. Okay, they're going to decide whether or not the government was in the wrong in a later case. So these are separate things. So how do they keep 230 and say that Facebook is able to do this, just using Facebook as an example?
Yeah, so it's very simple. 230 doesn't say that the platforms have no speech interest or have no speech that is at play when they moderate. In fact, the whole point of 230 is the opposite. It's that there is, to some extent, some ownership isn't quite the right word, but there's some amount of possession that platforms have over the speech that they allow to be on their platforms, and therefore we're just removing liability. That's what 230 says, and specifically civil liability. So 230 does something very limited. It removes liability in a way that allows free speech to flourish online and allows platforms to operate just to function and to exist. It was very disappointing to me to hear, especially some of the sharper Supreme Court justices, whom I usually have a lot of respect for, be completely unable to grasp this distinction.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it sounds like Thomas and Alito probably are going to be on the other side of this one. I mean, I think they're going to be okay in this case. I think we're going to have the outcome that you and I want in this case. I'm more concerned with the next case where they talk about what the government did and suggesting to these platforms who they should and shouldn't censor. But I would caution people on the right that are upset about Trump getting removed or about conservative talking points being removed or people being banned, that allowing the government to get this involved, especially calling them a common carrier. Think about all the regulations that the government has on any of the common carriers you can think of. Like, opening that door to calling them this is way too dangerous, in my opinion.
No, I think that is the exact point of all this. It's odd watching all the Republican state officials who are very exercised over the Biden administration's informal efforts to shape what was said online, turn around and look at the net choice cases and say the government should also be involved in this other way in shaping what is and what isn't said online. It's a very weird contradiction, particularly because if the states, the Republican states, Florida and Texas, prevail in the net choice cases, one of two things happens. Either the internet becomes, or social media platforms choose to become free-for-alls, and as much as I am what has two thumbs and loves the First Amendment? What has two thumbs and loves for free speech and John Stuart Mill? This guy. However, I don't want to be on a website that is dominated by Nazis. I'm sorry. I don't want to spend my time there. And there are truly platforms that do not moderate content. And the worst, you know, they become wretched hives of scum and villainy and whatnot. So you do need some basic content moderation. So sort of like the true free speech absolutism is one possible outcome of a bad decision in these cases. And then the other outcome is that platforms just clamp down very heavily on entire subject groups. And they say, okay, so if we can't discriminate based off of viewpoint, we just won't let anyone talk about the topic. And suddenly you have an internet that is functionally far less free than it was beforehand. And then I'm sure the Republicans would start, or at least hopefully they would start rethinking all of the conclusions and rethink what they had wrought.
It sounds more like turning Facebook into an HR chat room or something like that. That doesn't sound very good to me. And also, one last point I'll say on this is that when these laws were passed, Elon Musk had not yet bought Twitter, and that has happened since then. In my opinion, that is a great example of the free market working, or the market working. Someone coming in and saying, well, we need to have a freer place for people's ideas. And so someone came in and spent a ton of money, and now there is a website that millions of people are using that we can all go and say almost anything that we want that wasn't there at the time the laws were actually passed. And it didn't take the laws for this to happen. It actually took someone in the market coming in and changing things up. And I think that's a much better direction for us to go. But David, I'm going to let you go. Where can people go to follow you and see more of your stuff?
I am in many places, but I will just point people to X, the platform formerly known as Twitter, and you can find me at David B. McGarry.
All right. When you give people the website, do you still say twitter.com/ or whatever, or is there an x.com/ thing? I don't know which one this is.
I still say Twitter, but that's just a little bit of my cantankerous get off my lawn old manism coming out, where yeah. I wrote recently, to paraphrase Billy Joel, it may be X now, but it will always be Twitter to me.
Yeah, I agree. That's the worst thing Musk ever did. Don't ever change the name of something that's become a verb. It's not a good idea. So anyway, all right, David, thank you so much. We'd love to have you back on again soon.
Thanks, my friend. Looking forward to it.
This hour of Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Dash is the cryptocurrency designed to be used for spending. Tired of the ever-inflating U.S. dollar? You can live your life on Dash instead, with some handy websites. Bitrefill.com has been accepting Dash for years and has a ton of big-name retailers and brands, including grocers, gas stations, phone refills, Amazon, and even prepaid MasterCards. Plus, many of their gift cards are available at a discount. But what about paying your bills? Spritz.finance can do that, and they can send dollars to your bank account in case you still need those for some reason. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges, including the decentralized Maya protocol, and in multi-crypto wallets. It's easy to get and use Dash. Start by learning more at Dash.org. Thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air. Visit Dash.org to learn about Dash. Dash.org.
Free Talk Live.
What's up, all of our liberty-loving friends? This is another fantastic episode of Liberty at Night with Nate and Charlie on the Free Talk Live network, coming at you from Nashville, Tennessee. You may have seen that story about Wendy's trying surge pricing. Before I go all the way in on this, Charlie, you tell me what you think about this plan.
I did see this
from Wendy's,
by the way. Yeah.
What do you?
So this is from Chief Warren. She tweets, Wendy's is planning to try out surge pricing. That means you could pay more for your lunch, even if the cost of Wendy's stays exactly the same. It's price gouging, plain and simple, and American families have had enough. I have a couple thoughts on this. First of all, it's not price gouging. It's just supply and demand.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
If more people are in the drive-thru and in the counters trying to order at the same time, that they're demanding, the demand has gone up, the supply or the resources that are supplying the supply are limited, then the cost increases typically in a supply and demand economy.
I was talking to our friend John about this yesterday, and I was like, you know, I think it's a pretty terrible idea on their part, but
that was going to be my second part to this, which is, this is dumb. The Wendy's is going to lose money for this.
Yeah.
Because people are going to stop showing up.
Which is, well, let's, I'm doing my best to hold off right now. I found some interesting comments on here and what people were saying. This person, Ferran Cousin, said, "Hey, Wendy's, will your employees be getting surge pay during busier hours? Or is the excess profit of your surge pricing going directly into the pockets of executives?" Comments on it: "I'm not eating at Wendy's, even if they don't do this. Any company that would allow this thought to enter into any public consciousness isn't worth my money." Stuff like that. A bunch of people saying that they're not going to Wendy's anymore. Robert Reich sounded off on this as well. "While Wendy's plans to price gouge you with Uber-style surge pricing," it's not. Price gouging is not a thing. It's supply and demand that we don't like. It's simultaneously enriching wealthy shareholders with a $500 million stock buyback program. That's the thing about corporate greed. It's shameless. They'll just keep pushing to see how far they can go.
You know what is price gouging? Like the state of Illinois raising their registration for vehicles.
Yeah.
From, you know, $80 up to $350 or whatever it is now.
Yeah. You have no other options.
There's no other options.
You have to have it or they'll impound your car.
Right. That is like that. What actually is price gouging, you know?
Wendy's to test. Here's a news headline: "Wendy's to test surge pricing menu that updates based on demand." New York Times: "Dynamic pricing for burgers and shakes. Wendy's will give it a whirl." Thank you to the New York Times for using the actual phrasing that was used by Wendy's. Another one: "Wendy's pays the price for comments on digital menu board potential." We're getting closer to the truth right now, but let's go through this New York Post article right now. "Wendy's planning Uber-style surge pricing where burger prices fluctuate based on demand." From what I could find, this was the New York Post were the first people to post about this. That becomes important later on. Go ahead, Charlie.
All right. "Wendy's is preparing to test an Uber-style surge pricing model where the cost of menu items will fluctuate throughout the day based on demand, meaning a Dave's burger will cost more during the lunch or dinner rush. The fast food chain's unappetizing plans, set to be tested in a high-stakes rollout next year, will squeeze more money out of already inflation-battered Americans who may not have the option to eat their meals during off-peak hours." And they have to go to Wendy's, you know.
Have to.
"Wendy's CEO Kirk Tanner announced the new system on a call with investors, noting the Ohio-based company will invest $20 million on high-tech menu boards that will be able to update prices in real time without incurring additional overhead costs."
Oh, yeah. So, sorry, let me go ahead and give you some more here.
"As we continue to show the benefit of this technology in our company-operated restaurants, franchisee interest in digital menu boards should increase, further supporting sales and profit growth across the system." Tanner didn't put a ceiling on how much the dynamic pricing model could spike the cost of a meal or whether the base price would actually fall during slower periods. Representatives for Wendy's, which has more than 6,000 locations nationwide, would not say how much prices could fluctuate. "Dynamic pricing can allow Wendy's to be competitive and flexible with pricing, motivate customers to visit, and provide them with the food they love at a great value. We will test a number of features that we think will provide an enhanced customer and crew experience." So you're saying prices can go up and down?
They can go up and down, except for before we go through the whole thing, let me just go ahead and let people know something here. This isn't true. They never said they were going to do surge pricing and all of this is made up.
They only said that they were going to have menu item or digital menu boards.
They said that they were going to do something called dynamic pricing and upselling. My assumption here is that the reason I said the first place I could find this was the New York Post was because I was trying to trace it back to where surge pricing came from. Every time someone says surge pricing in one of these articles, they put it in quotes. They put it in quotes because no one ever actually said it. They're quoting someone else who said it. And so each person continues to quote someone else who said surge pricing and what they call it. And the New York Post is the first place I could trace it back to. I actually went through their earnings report and looked at what they actually said in the earnings report, and they never said anything about prices going up during high demand hours or anything like that. They said they could do dynamic pricing and upselling. I went and pulled a screenshot from their earnings report where they say dynamic pricing and menu offerings, upsell capabilities. My assumption is that maybe some people don't know what upselling is, which could mean if you came there to buy a burger, they could ask if you want fries. That's upselling. Mm-hmm.
Or add bacon.
In this case, they're talking about using AI to try and get it to upsell you on particular items on the menu when you come up. Hell, maybe they can even recognize your car when it pulls up eventually. Mm. I don't know. Something like that.
Put your standard order in.
Yeah.
Ask if you want to add anything.
That's not a terrible idea, in my opinion. Dynamic pricing could be surge pricing, but then you would have to assume that the people who run Wendy's are complete idiots, because this is a really terrible idea. Dynamic pricing means that the prices can change for your items. It also means you could do bundled options. It means that you could do happy hour options. It means that you could do different things like this. Surge pricing is one of them, what Uber does. But there's also other things. Like here's one saying dynamic pricing in restaurants. Restaurants have done dynamic pricing for decades. Happy hours at bars is a form of dynamic pricing, letting customers know that if they come during a less crowded and demanding time, they'll be rewarded with cheaper drinks. If you've ever taken your kid to a restaurant on a quiet Tuesday evening because that's when the restaurant has a Kids Eat Free program, that's an example of dynamic pricing. For the most part, restaurants didn't do that. All that much dynamic pricing on their menus. For instance, Subway had that $5 footlong deal years ago. No matter what time of day, you could go into a Subway and get a $5 footlong. That was dynamic pricing for their option. What Wendy has actually said is that they are going to have a fully digital video menu board that is backed up by AI that will be able to change on the fly for different times of the day and for different days of the week, and it will fully update all of those changes automatically in the system. For a restaurant to do some type of a sale on something, well, they got to print out stuff or whatever. Like you see, they put stuff on the tables, or you'll see corporate has to ship them these new things that they, you know, maybe they stick it in the dirt outside the menu, or they ship them a new plastic thing that they pop into the menu that's out there by the drive-thru or
new,
whatever.
New window.
Yeah.
Coverings.
Stuff like that. What they actually said on their earnings call is that all of those things that you already see restaurants do, they're just going to have it all fully digital in their menu boards, and that there's going to be an AI system backing up the time of day that they do these different menu changes. Mm-hmm. They never said that they were going to...
Like $1 Frosties.
Yeah, something like that. That's dynamic pricing. Mm. So while they... I'm not just going to say that they would never do something like raise prices in peak hours or something like that, but all the reporting I've seen on this has been complete fugazi on this.
Do you think maybe that was slightly purposeful so that Wendy's would be in the news? Because
maybe.
When was the last time you went to a Wendy's? I got to tell you, their burgers are not that great.
I mean, I used to enjoy a Baconator back in the day, you know?
Yeah.
I did.
You know?
But these articles are not backed up by anything other than other people talking about stuff. Even when they bring in an example, they bring in, they talk about how pricing on items vary depending on location, which is always a thing. A Wendy's meal in downtown Times Square, New York, costs different than it does in Franklin, Tennessee, or that it does in New Jersey somewhere, something like that.
Probably because... And, the rent is a lot higher.
Yeah. And that's, yeah, there's the right there a specific reason that the prices would be different. Maybe you could say they're trying to charge a higher price because there's a higher volume of people in Times Square in New York. You could also say they pay way more money to have that location there. So there's two parts of this story, in my opinion. One is how fast everyone jumped on this. Wendy's surge pricing was trending. you know, tons of people out there talking trash about Wendy's, which they probably just deserve on account of the quality of their food.
Yeah, which isn't that great.
My wife says Frosties are good. I don't know. I've never had one. Mm. But,
I mean, anybody can make a chocolate milkshake.
Yeah.
Basically.
So, you know.
Their old fries were better to dip in it. These new, like, natural cut fries that never cooked properly, at least when I've had them, they don't dip in the Frosty as well. Yeah. They don't taste the same as it used to.
Like I want chewing on leather.
I want the crappy fries, not these natural cut fries with potato skin still on them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I dip my fries into a Frosty, typically, the last time I dipped fries into a Frosty, I got McDonald's fries.
Yeah.
And then a Wendy's Frosty, and I dip my McDonald's in the Wendy's.
So Wendy's responded to this. There's actually some pretty funny things. Keep in mind, they never said that they were going to do anything called surge pricing. They said dynamic pricing. Mm. People assume that meant they were going to say surge pricing.
And we haven't seen a surge since the 90s.
No, we haven't.
You know? When was the last time you drank a surge?
This community note, by the way, is the only reason that I knew that this was not all it was made up. Because when I talked to John about it yesterday, I had only seen Elizabeth Warren's post about this. That's all I'd seen. And I saw an article. I was like, wow, Wendy's doing surge pricing. That's a bold move on their part. And we were both like, well, that's a terrible idea, but I guess they have the right to do it, you know, but it's going to work out awful for them. And then I go back to it later and I see there's a community note on there saying that Wendy's never said surge pricing and that they put out a statement on this whole thing. They said earlier this month, we issued our fourth quarter and full year 2023 earnings results and included an update on investments we were making in our digital business. By the way, I listened to stock market shows every single day of the week, and I listened around the time Wendy's did their earnings call. No one ever said anything about how Wendy's was going to be introducing surge pricing or anything like that. That would have definitely been news in the stock market world for a big restaurant to be doing this. And there are people whose entire lives and jobs revolve around combing through every word that these CEOs say on these earnings calls. And no one in the stock market world ever insinuated that they were talking about doing surge pricing whatsoever. I've only been able to trace this back to the New York Post being the first people to post about it. One initiative is digital menu boards, which are being added to U.S. company-operated restaurants. We said these menu boards would give us more flexibility to change the display of featured items. This was misconstrued in some media reports as an intent to raise prices when demand is highest at our restaurants. We have no plans to do that and would not raise prices when our consumers are visiting us most. Any features we may test in the future would be designed to benefit our customers and restaurant crew members. Digital menu boards could allow us to change the menu offerings at different times of the day and offer discounts and value offers to our customers more easily, particularly in slower times of the day. The reason I actually wanted to talk about this was how fast people jumped on this, how big of a deal it was, at least in the Twitter space. A lot of that has to do, I think, with just people's general hatred for businesses.
Mm, yeah.
General hatred for corporations.
Rich people.
For rich people, anyone who is turning a profit. And so this idea of price gouging just flew on the internet so quickly yesterday and saw so many people jump on it. And
well, this was reported on by real journalists now, you know,
it was
just doing their job.
This is the time the New York Post should have been censored yesterday when they posted this, I guess. They had a couple quotes here from Wendy's. Let me try and find it real quick. To clarify, Wendy's will not implement surge pricing, which is the practice of raising prices when demand is highest. We didn't use that phrase, nor do we plan to implement that practice. They added there are no plans to raise prices at high demand. We said that these boards would give us more flexibility to change the display of featured items. There's their actual quote saying that it was misconstrued. I saw something really funny after this, which I didn't finish putting all of it in there in the show notes today. The news articles changed to they were backtracking on their surge pricing idea. So after Wendy's clarified, and after it came out that they never actually said this, the news reports changed into Wendy's backtracks on surge pricing idea after backlash online. And
they never said it from the get-go. After
they never actually had the plan to do it.
Well, maybe they did plan to do it secretly.
But at the end of the day, they could do it if they wanted to.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I don't think it'd be good for business.
It would be a terrible business idea.
Yeah.
It's also different from the Uber model of doing surge pricing.
Although if they only did a few cents, you know,
people aren't going to notice that.
Be like Office Space.
Yeah.
You know,
just a little bit at a time.
Yeah. And then all that would obviously flow into the CEO's pocket.
I did see that post that Tactical Warlock just posted. That was a really good one. It's got the, is that Wall Street? Is that what the movie is? When I buy a Baconator on the dip, short the sandwich at 12:15 and turn a 27% profit. Now in trading terms, that doesn't make any sense, but it was a really funny post.
Yeah.
It had like 12,000 retweets at the time that I saw it.
Yeah.
That was really good. The Uber model makes sense because you're trying to attract drivers to come out and drive and fulfill the demand at really busy times. And so as someone who's a former Uber driver, you do pay attention to times when there could be surge pricing. And they do that because they want more drivers to come out and actually facilitate that demand that they're getting. Maybe it's a concert or a game, which then lowers the price back down.
Yeah.
And so you do actually offer to pay the drivers more money. And the riders pay more money, and the drivers get paid more money, and more people come out. They take care of the demand, and people get better service afterwards. Now, the restaurant, it's not as if you're going to see there's a long line to drive through, and you're going to bump the prices up, you know, by 20% on everything.
Crew members in the door,
crew members start walking in to come and take care of you, whatever. Like that's not. So the idea doesn't even make sense. Is what I'm saying, which is probably why Wendy's never planned to do it in the first place.
Yeah.
And so there's that. I don't know what the entire point of that is, other than it's crazy how fast people will jump on something on social media. And luckily, Community Notes came in and let some people know. But it is crazy how fast people will jump on something. And it's also crazy how the media, how different publications will quote what another publication said. And then when you read it on their publication, it seems like it's something that the original person said, like Wendy said, but actually they're quoting what someone else in another article called it.
Without doing the research.
Yeah. Without actually doing any of the research. And then by the time you read like the fourth article, which is quoting the three articles before it, you think it has something to do with what the actual original subject is doing. But actually, they're just quoting what all of the other people said in these articles. And so it was crazy to watch that happen yesterday, basically, is what I'm saying right now. Speaking of restaurants. Foods.
Yeah, I saw this as well.
Yeah, yep. Speaking of foods, just real quick before we go, you have to call out Gavin Newsom when you can. Future president Gavin Newsom.
Yeah, probably. You know,
probably.
Mm-hmm.
Corrupt guy, for sure, as I think it's a safe assumption for most politicians. But in that new fast food law, the FAST Act, where they are bumping everyone up to $20 an hour and putting a whole bunch of people out of work, especially if you're a Pizza Hut delivery person or whatever, they exempted Panera. More specifically, they exempted people that bake bread and sell it as a standalone item.
So look out for the
exactly
McBaguette coming.
I want to see this
McDonald's near you.
I want
you.
To see this happen.
Yeah,
I want to see this happen in California for McDonald's and Burger King and even Wendy's that have surge price baguettes, and they won't have to pay people the $20 an hour because that's been exempted. It turns out that was exempted because Gavin Newsom is friends, and I believe it said he even went to they went to the same high school. Maybe not together. It's in the same high school.
And also donates a lot to his campaign. Yeah,
been involved with business dealings. Apparently, this is a specific carve out in the law exempting Panera from this law. Now, why? Think about it for a minute.
Well, chains that bake bread and sell it as a standalone item.
And sure, there's other chains. But tell me for a minute why it makes logical sense that chains that bake bread and sell it as a standalone item shouldn't have to pay their workers a living wage if you're someone who thinks along that route. Mm-hmm. It's because of the friendship with this guy.
No, Nate. Like, that's just...
That's all you got to ask right
there. That friends would make deals like this.
Like, tell me the economic argument where the people who work for a bakery don't deserve the same living wage as the people who work at McDonald's.
Yeah. Well,
you know,
I'll tell you, because They just don't, because baking bread, you know, still a regular job. Still, you know?
It's because of the history of baking bread. Yeah. And you go all the way back to Adam Smith, you know.
Baking bread's not the same as flipping burgers.
So it isn't at all. It's a way easier than flipping burgers. I'm being sarcastic when I say that. Anyhow, the main point of this, which we glossed over the entire article, but we gave you the bullet points, is that even the compassionate people who want to help those that are in need and make sure that people get the living wage that they deserve at the end of the day.
Or at least want to appear that way.
Want to appear that way. At the end of the day, they still just care about their own money, their own political donations, their own friends, and they will allow carve-outs to come in to help their own friends potentially save money. Now, Panera, it's not exactly like Panera is not going to have to pay $20 an hour, because if Panera is lined up next to a bunch of restaurants that pay $20 an hour, then the workers are going to leave Panera and they're going to go work at that place. Mm-hmm. As long as those places are actually still hiring people and they're not just using machines or whatever, you know? So it's not exactly like it's going to work out for a massive save for Panera, because they do have to be competitive with the rest of the businesses that are in their neighborhood. But this is specifically a carve out for Gavin Newsom's friend.
Yeah.
Is the deal.
Yep.
That's all we have time for.
Gavin
today
said, "Don't worry, Glenn. We'll take care of you." And they did. Isn't it? They thought they were going to slip this in. Mm-hmm. You know, no one would notice, but it's been noticed.
But later, when he runs for president, eventually, we're going to go into depth and detail about his family's ties to natural gas and oil, and the reasons they've been against nuclear and all kinds of stuff like that. Because it turns out, he's got a lot of ties in the energy sector, like in his family specifically, and is extremely corrupt. And many of California's energy policies could, in fact, stem from the fact that is where all of his money comes from. More to come on Liberty at Night with Nate and Charlie on the Free Talk Live Network.
On Free Talk Live, we're bringing people to the ideas of liberty every day. From wrestling superstars like Glenn Jacobs.
You guys really are having an impact, I believe. Like I said, a lot of where I am now is due to listening to Free Talk Live. You changed my mind on some very important issues years ago.
To random people tuning in on the radio.
I was kind of stuck in the left-right paradigm. I heard your show by chance on a Saturday night. From there, I went on, joined the Free State Project, and become an amplifier. So, I mean, that's really the reason why I amp is because I know that if it wasn't for you guys being on as many stations as you are, I never would have found the ideas of liberty.
You can help more people hear the message of liberty by joining Free Talk Live's AMPS program on Patreon for as little as $5 a month. And you'll get access to special perks. Visit amps.freetalklive.com, amps.freetalklive.com.
What's up, all of our liberty-loving friends? This is another fantastic episode of Liberty at Night with Nate and Charlie on the Free Talk Live Network, coming at you from Nashville, Tennessee. Before we get into this segment, I got to tell you, our daily show, which is Good Morning Liberty, you can find on your podcast app. We're sponsored by Noble Gold Investments, and I got to tell you, I messed up bad. I started the savings account a few years ago. I put $5,000 in it, and then I never looked at it again. I don't really know why I started it. The problem is that $5K is now worth $4,145. I just lost money in it. The government punishes you for keeping your money in cash or in a savings account. And how do they do that? They do that with inflation. Inflation is a tax, and it's a tax on savers. It's a systematic erosion of your wealth, your money, your income. Items that cost $10 today could cost $15 tomorrow, but your savings account will still have the same amount of money in it, and it's losing purchasing power. Trust me, I did it. The founders of Noble Gold, they've got more than 20 years of combined experience in buying gold and silver. They've secured over $1 billion in precious metals for their clients. This is exciting because gold can be a hedge against inflation. Gold remains steady when inflation's on the rise and the dollar's in turmoil. Gold can be the fence against economic downturn. Unlike money, it can't be printed. It's your shield in times of economic uncertainty. Gold's value doesn't just hold, it increases during inflationary periods. To find out more, you can go to noblegoldinvestments.com/GML. That's noblegoldinvestments.com/GML. Well, if you don't already know, if it's your first time listening, on our daily show, Good Morning Liberty, we do an episode every week called Dumb Bleep of the Week. We've been doing it now for, I don't know, 3 or 4 years. It's everyone's favorite episode. And we take submissions on dumb bleep entries, on dumb entries from everyone. Mainly we take them from the Fed Haters Club. Those are the people who are subscribing and listening to us live all the time. Join gmail.com. But I also want to let you guys know, if you're listening on the Free Talk Live podcast app, or if you're listening on the radio somewhere around the country right now, that you can send us a submission, nate@goodmorningliberty.us, or you can go to Good AM Liberty on Twitter, AM for morning, on Twitter, and send us a submission. So,
hey, I got to tell you something real quick.
Okay.
You're a trendsetter.
Okay.
I'm seeing lots of shows now that do the dumbest thing of the week or the dumbest thing of the day or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They call it different names, but obviously they're all watching this show.
I can actually say with a pretty good confidence that at least in our sphere and in the political show sphere, that we were the first show that did a dumbest things, idiots or whatever roundup. I'm not saying that other people have explicitly copied off of us. I do, however, know of one show that actually did. Which is fine. We didn't trademark the idea or copyright the idea. Mm-hmm. But trend setting right now. I've thought about going back into the archives to find the earliest mentions of Dumb Bleep of the Week to see back when that actually
probably
started.
Probably 4 years old at this point.
It probably is. Mm-hmm. I could do it pretty easy. I can just search dumb in Megaphone and see when the first mention is and see when we started talking about it. But anyhow, this is Dumb Bleep of the Week.
I just wanted to congratulate you on being a trendsetter.
I appreciate that.
You know,
Thank you.
Barely made it into the millennial category. Setting trends is a big deal.
It is.
And so I just wanted you to feel proud about something in your life. And hopefully that makes you feel slightly proud.
Finally. I hope other people are proud of me as well. For sure. A 15-second, let me just let you know, I went and saw Dune 2 yesterday. Anyone who's interested, it's a very good movie.
And I wasn't invited.
Charlie wasn't invited. That's the most important part. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons the movie was so good, no doubt.
Because I wasn't there.
Yeah, so I'm saying almost 3 hours long, but it was worth it. It's the best movie I've seen in a long time. And after the third one comes out, I think it's going to be, in my opinion, the best trilogy I've ever seen, because these first two movies are the best, highest quality, best story content for the beginnings of a trilogy I've ever seen. So there is a third one in the works right now, I saw. So I'm pumped about that in 10 years when it comes out. Anyhow, let's get to Dumb Bleep of the Week so we can get going for the fine folks on both sides listening today. Nina Turner is going to be on number one. Now, oddly enough, this starts with it not being Nina Turner being the dumb. She's on a panel on CNN the day that Michigan was holding their primary and those uncommitted votes are coming in. And she was talking about why so many people are voting uncommitted. Clearly, it was because of distaste and disgust with the war in Gaza and American involvement and Biden's support of Israel in the war in Gaza. And Nina Turner is on the CNN panel. And she is, she's talking about why that's happening. And then we're going to talk about a couple of the responses afterwards because it was ridiculous. Here's what she says.
And they are in fact suffering. And I am young enough to remember, colleagues, when Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib and also Congresswoman Cori Bush called for a ceasefire very early on, they were called abhorrent. Now, fast forward to all of these bodies laying in the wake and people who are living through this every single day.
There's also been slaughter in Israel.
I was going to say.
There's a lot of pain on both sides.
I'm not
lecture on the problem. I'm talking about the politics of this tonight.
Why is that white man interrupting a black man?
What to you would be a victory, as somebody was calling for this uncommitted vote, what to you would be a victory tonight to get that message across?
I'm not denying that pain. All I'm saying that at a certain point after October the 7th, it becomes clear. I mean, you have a right-wing prime minister.
Right. We don't need to read the issue.
But you understand what I'm saying? I'm not denying anybody's pain. What I am saying is that this president and our country has the power to say to Netanyahu, we need a permanent ceasefire. The only time The only time hostages were released is when we had that brief ceasefire. That is another reason.
And then they eventually cut her off right there. So that's that's what kind of started.
Who invited this woman from Twitter?
That's what kind of started this whole thing. Now, they don't want her discussing why people are voting uncommitted. So that, like, that in itself, you could say what she's saying is completely fine. I would agree with a lot of it, actually. They are cutting her off. They don't want her to talk about the reasoning behind why so many people are voting uncommitted in this. And so that was all clearly happening. Then you get a dumb and then a dumb piled on top of another one after that. So Jared Moskowitz, let me see who that is real quick. Actually, if we could look him up. He says, Nina Turner is an open anti-Semite. She would be nowhere on TV. She should be nowhere on TV spreading her hateful rhetoric. She's an open anti-Semite. Now, in that clip that we just played, I didn't hear any hateful rhetoric or anti-Semitic rhetoric.
I didn't.
Whatsoever. I heard criticism of the government of Israel. I heard a discussion about why so many people are unhappy with Biden and voting uncommitted. I didn't hear anything anti-Semitic or anything hateful even said by her in that clip. Okay, so that's a ridiculous thing to say, first off. But why call someone an anti-Semite when they're just out there explaining why people are voting? And you're talking about 30,000 people dying in Gaza and you're upset about that. It's kind of human and natural to be upset about 30,000 people dying in a little tiny country. That's
so you're saying Nina's against death due?
Right now she is.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, then she responds to this, because I thought it was ridiculous that he called her an anti-Semite for saying what she just said. She says, Congressman, see, I thought he was a congressman. How dare you try to smear my character like this? You should be ashamed. Nothing I said was anti-Semitic. It's anti-black for you to try to throw dirt on my name for simply standing up for humanity. Ridiculous. She almost had it. She almost wasn't the dumb just then. She was so close because she could have said all of the things except for one of them.
The anti-black. Yeah.
So where he assumes that whatever she just said was anti-Semitic.
Now, she could have said it's antebellum of you for trying to throw dirt on my name. You know?
Yeah, something like that, I guess. That
would have been a better anti.
Any other anti for this. But for it to be ridiculous for him to call her anti-Semitic because of what she just said on that panel, and then for her to come back and say that he's trying to smear your name and then call him anti-black for saying what he said, which from what I could tell, going back to what he said, had nothing to do with her being black. Mm-hmm. That, not that I know of, other than the fact that he's white, from what I can tell in this profile photo, and now he's saying this about a black person. I don't think that makes it anti-black either. What do you think?
This is what happens. We've talked about this so many times, but this is what happens in the, you know, the political warfare, the identity politics. You know, it's like you got to throw out the identity on top of it. So she's, I'm assuming, with that guy's last name, and, you know, he might be Jewish, possibly.
Could be. I don't know.
And so he's attacking her for being an anti-Semite, which... Nothing she said. She might be. I don't know. but nothing she said in that clip was anti-Semitic.
Yeah.
So I don't know if she is or not, but at least regarding the clip that he shared, nothing she said was anti-Semitic. So, but he calls her that. And so, of course, like if you get called a name, like any good 3-year-old, you're going to call a name right back.
You have to. It's a rule.
That's what's happening these days.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anyway, that's dumb bleep number one. I guess it goes to Nina Turner. I could have given it to Jared Moskowitz for saying what he said about Nina Turner, but then she came over and like we're playing checkers or something, and she like kinged his dumb on top of that. You know?
She could have added misogynistic in there. It would have been a little bit better.
That's true.
She could have thrown some more identity at him.
Yeah.
Give it to identity politics. Yeah,
the entire exchange is the dumb bleep. Okay. Yeah. All right. The next one is a quick one. And unfortunately, because she's made her account private now, I could not actually see the photo anymore. When I first saw the post, I could see the photo. This is just a screenshot from my email. Your email still shows you the post that you shared to yourself. But when you click on it, you can't see it anymore. Here's what Jacqueline McCosker had to say, Charlie. What is it?
Well, it was a picture of a positive COVID test.
So you did see this.
I saw this. Yeah. She said, well, friends, as the only person I've known still actively avoiding disease, my time has come. You know, it's always best to start a tweet with patting yourself on the back.
Yeah.
You know, it shows your humbleness.
My friends, as you know, I'm amazing and I'm better than anyone else that you know.
Yeah. Let me continue on about how good I am. I got boosted 12 days ago and masked in airport, Ubers, PT, I'm guessing physical therapy, in all crowds. Almost exclusively, I was the sole masker, the only person trying. This is the result of doing public health alone.
And as you said, the picture is a picture of a
positive COVID test,
which is just
thoughts and prayers, Jacqueline.
Thoughts and prayers. You know, I sort of feel bad for her, and I hate to
Here's the thing, too. In 2024, she just got boosted. That means she's probably had, at this point, 5 or 6 boosters.
She's half vaccine at this point. So,
by the way, she tested positive. She should have no symptoms whatsoever. And also, I don't know how she got it, getting that many boosts.
I know.
You know?
Don't the microchips eventually like cancel each other out? You know? Can they all work that closely?
Now we can't put this on YouTube.
Dang it.
You just said microchips.
It was a joke.
Yeah, well, okay. You can't joke on YouTube about COVID.
We're making fun of someone who thinks that they're... at the end of the day, this is someone posting that they got sick. Something worse than the common cold, you know, something akin to the flu, although different. YouTube gods, we do realize, although different. Okay.
I tell you my first two thoughts when I saw this before reading it? I saw the picture and I just saw, friends, as the only person I've known.
I thought it was a pregnancy test myself.
My first thought was pregnancy. And then the second thought was like cancer or something.
Yeah.
Like she was announcing because it was going viral. And then I saw that it was a COVID test and I was like, oh my God.
I was going to say earlier, I kind of feel bad for her because she's clearly been manipulated into fear, so much fear at this point that she's
MFP.
She's changed her entire life around and she's still wearing a mask all the time in 2024. I don't know if she has any other, you know, pre-existing conditions or anything like that that she's worried about.
How did she get it by masking? I thought masks stopped.
Well, you see, public health, the thing is that yours doesn't work if other people don't do it. You know, that's how vaccines and masks work these days, according to the new live standards.
Group,
you know,
the live group is making some valid points. She never said that she avoided raw cookie dough.
No, she didn't.
You know,
did she go hang gliding?
She never said whether or not she wipes front to back. This is from the live group. They want to know if she's dying. They feel bad for her. They're wondering if she injected bleach. These are just questions that people are asking. Tried.
Who knows? Which you shouldn't do. It's not a FDA approved or anything.
Does she use 5G?
Definitely does now.
This tweet is just inconclusive.
Her whole body is an antenna.
She didn't give us enough information.
Okay, then bleep number three. James Clyburn had some thoughts on Biden's recent gaffes, and he says that they have nothing to do with his brain or age or anything. It's just because of his struggles with stuttering.
Yeah, because he stuttered so much in his previous 50 years.
I remember all the videos of Joe Biden we've seen of him just really having a hard time overcoming that stutter. And so here's a little bit of that.
When he was authoring the crime bill in the 90s, he seemed to be pretty stuttering. On point.
Yeah. Talking about kids, you know, not when I grew up in a racial jungle and stuff like that. I mean, that was a stutter problem back then. Here we go.
There's something wrong with Trump. All of that meandering that he was doing today, but we never see any reporting on that. If Joe Biden commits a gaffe, a guy who stuttered all of his childhood into his adulthood, and everybody know his stuttering is what caused a lot of his speech impediments, and we know that. It has nothing to do with his brain. He stumbles one time and everybody says he's too old to be a president. Look, we had a president of the East United States. I saw the rankings the other day, who in the top 10, and some people got him in the top 3. Franklin Roosevelt was in a wheelchair. It didn't bother his brain. He got elected president more often than anybody else in the history of the country. He ranks as being one of the best presidents.
He got elected president more often than anyone else in the country. Yeah, he had 4 terms. He was drooling in his last term. By the way,
his wife ran things.
Being in a wheelchair is not the same thing as your brain not working. Like, there can be differences.
I also like how he said he stumbles one time.
Yeah.
It's been more than once here, Clyburn.
If it were only one time. Well, now that's a different thing.
Nobody would be talking about it.
But we got a whole host of buttons on the board to show you that it's not.
Beer brewed here, it is used to make the brew beer in this fine. Oh, Earth Rider, thanks for the Great Lakes. I wonder why it's
stuttering. Yeah, that's stuttering.
Let me start off with 2 words. Made in America. Made in America.
Okay, hang on. Sorry. Oh.
It's one of my favorites. Hang on. Let me say, sorry. Oh. It's like the light bulb went off.
That's one of the best ones to use for the podcast intro, actually. Yeah. It's like, oh.
Yeah.
That's a really good one. No, it's not stuttering. And one of the worst parts about this is that, first off, the guy on CNN, I can't think of the dude's name right now.
Not important. No one watches it anyway.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. You can't push back on him and say, Clyburn, Representative Clyburn, stuttering? Do you really think that that's what it is? The dude's 81 years old. We've been listening to him for decades now.
Also, they can go back to like his childhood, right? Mm-hmm. Why don't they go back to like when he was in the Senate, when he was actually saying racist things?
Yeah.
And as a black congressman, be like, yeah, I know he's a Democrat, but I don't really support him because he said these racist things.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand how they, like, these people get a pass. Like, some people get a pass.
It's all a means to an end. It's all about making sure the Democrat Party wins whatever election. Like, the actual principles or whatever they say their beliefs are, what they actually care about, like, none of that is real. That's the actual answer.
Like, Paula Deen said the N-word one time, or got caught saying it one time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, canceled forever.
She sells restaurants, though.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and then, but the president of the United States, Biden, because he's a Democrat, like, can be as racist as possible for, like, 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
And even say in the election that he won that if you don't vote for him, you're not black. Saying that, like, if black people don't vote for him, then actually the color of their skin is doesn't exist.
That's not even factually accurate. First off, it's not scientifically true, any of those things.
And then he still gets, in fact, they'll make excuses for him.
Because it's all a means to a certain end. That's all it is. The ends justify the means in this case. That's number 3, James Clyburn. Number 4, we'll go over.
I wanted you to notice one other thing, though.
What's that?
That was a Skype interview, which means James Clyburn, as a black person, was using the internet, which we were told.
Well,
black people have trouble with.
No, no, he's got plenty of white people working for him that were able to figure out how to use Skype.
Yeah.
You know, so I wouldn't give him too much credit.
God. I was just saying we were told not that long ago that black people don't know how to access the internet. They can't get their IDs and stuff like that. You know,
just in case if it's your first time listening, you're like, oh my God, what did they just say? No, no, that's not what we think. That's what Democrats think. That's, just so you know. Number four, we talked about this at length one of the days this week. I think Charlie was gone. NBC News article, Russia's 2024 election interference has already begun. We're not going to go into the article because I already spent, I think, 25 solid minutes going through this article on like Monday or Tuesday, something like that this week. So you can go back and listen to that episode.
And take the 1,187 episode challenge.
By today, today's 86. Oh. So you start your 187 challenge on Monday.
Yeah, that's right.
Go ahead and do that. So you get the weekend, you get a cheat weekend, and you start the 1187 challenge on Monday.
There you go.
Russia's 2024 election interference has already begun. This is a lengthy article that I went through. They don't name anything that Russia is currently doing to interfere in the election other than one group who has a profile on Twitter that has 51 followers and has not tweeted in a year. And then they name someone who has a, the same people have a Telegram channel, is it Telegram? One of those things that has 5,000 subscribers on it. And that's the only actual thing that they mention. The rest of this article talks about things that the government or experts fear that Russia could do to interfere with the election. So the dumb part about this is, once again, we are starting up this idea that Russia is going to interfere in our election, that they are actually going to affect the outcome of the election. They also talk about how Russia is trying to get people to be against the war effort in Ukraine, our war effort, which is giving them billions of dollars, and that comes from Russia and Moscow. No doubt they would be interested in doing that kind of thing. But at the end of the day, they finish up this article saying that don't worry about Russia so much because the Republicans have already decided that they're going to do Russia's bidding anyway. And so that is the dumb, basically, that we are starting this. We once again have no evidence that it's actually happening, but it is going to implant this idea in the people's minds that this is a thing that's happening. That way, they have something to fall back on if Trump happens to win the election in 2024. Especially after he gets all that presidential immunity, you know, from doing whatever he wants. All right, there's a whole lot more dumb bleep of the week on the way. What was that, number four, I think? Yeah, we get a lot more. We get a whole other hour of content on dumb bleep of the week. More to come very soon on Liberty at Night.
Free Talk Live.
What's up, all of our liberty-loving friends? This is another fantastic episode of Liberty at Night with Nate and Charlie on the Free Talk Live Network, coming at you from Nashville, Tennessee. And Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. With fees of less than a penny per transaction, Dash is made for spending. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies, and they're widely available on exchanges, including the decentralized Maya protocol and in multi-crypto wallets. Thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month for this sponsorship. It's easy to get and use Dash. You can learn more at dash.org. That's dash.org. Okay, right now, we are in the middle of Dumb Bleep of the Week. That's everyone's favorite episode. We've gone through four of them so far, and I think we have five or six more that we're going to be going through. If it's your first time listening and you just joined the show right now, we have a daily show, Charlie and I do, called Good Morning Liberty at Night on the Free Talk Live Network. On Tuesday nights, we're called Liberty at Night. But if you want to find us every single day of the week on your favorite podcast app, then you want to search Good Morning Liberty. Or you just want to put BernieLies.com in your browser, and that will bring up all of our links to all of our social media, YouTube. You know, we got videos from every episode, all that stuff. And we've got almost 1,200 episodes out there for you to go and enjoy. So make sure you go do that. And if you want to wear a t-shirt or something that says God Hates Feds, you can go to godhatesfeds.com. That's our website. And you can grab a shirt if you want to do that, or go to joingml.com so you can join the Fed Haters Club. And that way you can put in submissions for Dumb Bleep of the Week. And if you win, you get a trophy at the end of the year. Side note, I heard the actual legal arguments that Trump has brought up for this immunity claim. Those, aside from like saying that SEAL Team 6 could take out a election opponent, or that you should be, you know, that you would have a chilling effect on presidents, the legal arguments they're making in this case actually make me think it's possible the Supreme Court's going to say that he has immunity.
Hmm.
I went through several articles today and could not find anyone that listed out the legal arguments his lawyers are making, but they have two grounds. One of them is that it would be inappropriate for him to be charged when he has not been impeached and convicted in the Senate as the office holder that he was, and that he was impeached. He was not convicted for any of these crimes. And
so he's already been on trial, basically.
Yeah. And second was that it violates.
So they're arguing double jeopardy there?
They tried to argue double jeopardy one time, and I think that got thrown out potentially, but something like that. And second, they argued that there's a separation of powers problem because the DOJ, which is an arm of the executive branch, would be prosecuting someone, and that it actually has to come from the other branches, essentially, that it has to come from Congress, from the legislative branch or whatever. So they have to use the impeachment proceedings to go after someone who's in the executive branch. And I'm just saying, I don't know if they're going to go with it, but when I heard the legal arguments detailed in a much better form than I just detailed them, I was like, you know what?
But that's at a federal level. What about state?
No, not the state. The Georgia thing is, they can't do anything about that. Mm. So, and he can't even pardon himself on that one. So they're totally hinging on Phony Willis getting thrown out and no one taking up the case, something like that. Anyway.
But that begs the question, okay, but that's a question. Like, okay, if let's say the president murders someone.
Yeah.
It could be and they murder someone in D.C. Mm-hmm. It could be a federal crime.
I think.
How do you prosecute that? Who has jurisdiction over that?
So I'm not a lawyer and I'm not a constitutional scholar, but their argument would be that for the president, there is a process of impeachment, and that if he commits a crime like that, then Congress, then the House would need to impeach him and the Senate would need to convict him. Mm. And that if he obviously commits a crime like that, that is what happened, that is the court process for someone who holds that office. So
that's an interesting argument.
I hadn't actually heard anyone put out the legal case before, and it makes more sense. I'm not saying I like it whatsoever. I don't like the idea of presidents having immunity, but anyhow, let's get on to Dumb Bleep number 5. I have to mention this because Trump is potentially going to be the president again, and this is something that's going to happen, and it bothers me that people are so dumb. I don't think Trump is actually this dumb. I just think he hinges on his people being this dumb. But he says that if he gets elected, he's going to make sure that tariffs on foreign countries go up and that taxes on American workers and families come down.
Yeah.
Very substantially.
Yeah. That makes sense.
I don't know if you... So the problem is, the dumbest part about this is that people who support Trump would actually just look at the fact that taxes came down, they'd be like, oh, look, taxes came down. Look at Trump cutting taxes. And they wouldn't notice the price of their goods increased by like 20%.
Which, by the way, know. This is better than a direct income tax, I will say.
Tariffs?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean,
because then they're not directly stealing the money from you. And then you still, it's kind of like the national sales tax. You have a choice of whether or not you buy the goods.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's complicated.
But I will say, if you're going to give me the choice between direct income taxes or tariffs, I would choose tariffs. Although I will say it's not good. It's still anti-capitalism.
It is. The biggest,
because American consumers are going to pay more.
They're going to, it's
so
not,
it's
just
still kind of a tax, but it's not stolen directly from you.
It's not just that they're going to pay more. It's that our overall productivity would be slowed down. And wherever we could be in 20 years, we won't be at that point because we're not using our labor and our capital at its most efficient use that it could be being used. And so while it might be better for someone to make a product in China because they're better at it for whatever reason, instead, the main focus for some of these people is to make sure that that product gets made in the United States. Well, those people that are making this product in the United States could have been doing something better with their time other than making something that we could have just outsourced to someone else. And you want to find what that thing is. What's the better thing that they could be doing that would be better for everyone in America? And that's the thing that we miss out on instead of just seeing that, oh, well, we took that away from China and now they're going to be doing it here. We don't see the thing that they didn't work on and that they didn't build that we don't have right now. And so
that's why it's such a hard message to sell.
It creates a massive compounding unseen problem over time because you don't get that production that you would have had from those same people. So anyhow, dumb bleep number five. I don't know if we should give it to Trump or his ardent supporters. I think maybe both. Yeah, I think maybe it's both. Okay. I'm trying to gauge whether or not 112, is that enough for me to go pee?
Yeah, it is.
We'll play this video of Taylor Lorenz and what's her name? Kaya, the girl from Libs of TikTok. I don't know how to say her name. Okay. But Libs of TikTok girl. And they've had a history amongst each other because Taylor Lorenz, I believe, is the one who actually exposed who the person running Libs of TikTok was and where she lived, doxed her, all that kind of stuff. Well, they get into this little tip for tat about who has to worry more about.
Is she wearing a Taylor Lorenz crying t-shirt?
I think she is.
What, did they,
I'm not
they
sure.
agree to an interview or something?
Yeah, they do an interview.
Okay.
And
I saw something on this, but I didn't watch it.
Oh, I can't. I actually think it's the best time for me to go pee. Because,
but she's watching, or she's wearing the Taylor Lorenz crying t-shirt.
Yeah.
While talking to Taylor Lorenz.
It's a pretty good
this
troll.
It's hilarious.
It's a pretty good troll, for sure. The problem is, I don't care what either of these people think, really. The idea here comes down to the fact that Libs of TikTok and this girl that runs it are getting blamed for, say, bomb threats that have taken place at hospitals and stuff like that that perform procedures that people have disagreements with. And so basically she's getting blamed for exposing the truth or reposting things that people already posted publicly and just reposting them and saying, hey, look at what this person said.
You're right.
Then that's it. And so people are saying that she's responsible for some of the threats that have occurred towards the people that she's posted about. Well, she's also had death threats herself because of the stuff that she's posted. And they talk
to Taylor.
They talk about that.
Because she was anonymous.
A recent NBC investigation found at least 33 instances where you posted about a specific person or institution, and that person or institution was immediately bombarded with death threats and violent threats, including bomb threats, other violent threats. That's a pretty significant correlation. How do you, you know, what are your thoughts
on that? Yeah, I don't know if you saw, but I got like tons of death threats this week after the entire media machine came after me. So are they responsible for those?
I don't think that there's the same correlation. Are you receiving bomb threats?
I'm receiving death threats. Like, hi, I'm going to come murder you.
Yeah, and I definitely sympathize with you there.
Like,
I get those
literally
every day.
The article goes live and then I get those threats.
I get the same thing when a Fox News article goes live.
So is the journalist responsible, the journalist who posted the article?
I would say, you know, there's a different responsibility when we're talking about media. And I guess to me, a death threat is different than a violent bomb threat. A death threat, I think we're kind of getting normalized to them, unfortunately, online. We get a lot of them. Probably you and I get them constantly, 24/7.
Death threats are different. They're just normal. They're normalized now. It's much different than a violent bomb threat. It's, have you... And then what... What Libs of TikTok should have said, like, well, have you gotten a nuclear bomb threat?
That's worse.
He's just like, keep one up in each other. Yeah. People said they were going to kill you, but did they say they were going to kill you with a bomb?
My question I would ask to Taylor Lorenz after this
besides, why is she wearing a mask?
Yeah, that part. It's just probably her that posted that picture of the positive COVID test. I don't know. My question
have
for her.
Have you been hit on by Putin? Because I have.
How many bombs have we seen go off in the U.S.? Just say in the last 10 years.
I don't know.
I mean,
that we've seen or the like made the media.
Have we seen any?
Well, you had the Boston Marathon bomber.
Well, I said 10 years. is that within 10 years? Might be.
I think.
Could be.
Well, 20. Well, now it's 2014.
Yeah.
I don't know when that was.
It's almost none is the answer. How many deaths from murder have we seen?
Quite a lot. I mean, you watch Dateline all the time.
Probably a lot of murder deaths we've seen in the last 10 years. So my point is a death threat without a bomb should be taken way more seriously than a bomb threat, because the bomb threat statistically almost always never happens. And it's just someone making something up, calling something in to try and get school out early or to get, you know, to make someone evacuate somewhere. You never see that actually happen. You do, however, see people get killed.
Well, there were a lot of, you know, bomb threats against Target.
There were.
What were they? Like wedgie swimsuits or something? I don't remember what they were.
Tuck friendly.
Yeah.
Swimsuits.
They had a little more room.
Mm-hmm. That was misconstrued as being tuck friendly for kids. That wasn't the case. They were tuck friendly for adults, but there was also Pride kids section. I can't wait for Pride Month this year. It's going
to
be
then
fun.
We found out that it was actually people on the left were calling in the bomb threats to try to blame conservatives. I feel like Libs of TikTok missed an important point or missed an opportunity to make a perfect point at the very beginning by saying, like, I haven't come after anyone. I'm just literally reposting their content and asking if anybody's seen this.
And the idea
versus what they have done to her is like legitimately come after her.
Mm-hmm. I think that I was just reading what Bailey said. What if they end up becoming best friends? Wouldn't it be so cool if they end up doing stuff together all the time? They start like a podcast together or something and they talk about stuff. I would support that. I think that would be a cool thing for sure. So number six goes to Taylor Lorenz. We haven't seen her in a bit. Happy to have her back on Dumb Bleep of the Week for sure. She should say more dumb things. I'm sure she does. I just don't see it anymore. Number seven. Now we're getting some real fun stuff. Posted by Historic Vids, History and Memes. The question is, do you believe slavery ended or was it just modernized? Do you believe slavery ended or was it just modernized? There's a little graphic here. Do you believe slavery ended or was it just modernized? And what you see on the video are some workers at like a corporate office handing some paperwork to a boss. Of course, in this case, the boss is white. It wasn't made by Google Gemini or anything. and then you go back in time and you see, oh, well, look at slaves handing whatever they're holding to a king or an emperor or a slaveholder or whatever it is. And so the implication here, Charlie, is that work in our society is just slavery. Mm-hmm. That's the point that they're trying to get across. There are some comments on here that I wanted to highlight, some great thoughts from great Americans. This one says, we are slaves to our jobs more often than not. Why do I have to request time off of work? I should just notify you that I'm not coming in for a day instead of asking permission. How does that make sense? Slavery.
Yeah.
I don't know how often how many PTO days the slaves got or anything, but you know, it's kind of the same thing, right?
you ask it in a different way now.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of being like, hey, master, can I have a day off? Please, master.
Yeah.
And he would crack a whip and say no.
Yeah.
You know, nowadays you just fill out like a little form online, typically through your HR, you know, system, whatever that is.
You put in a time off request.
Yeah. And they don't have whips anymore.
No.
When they say no.
No. They use the threat of taking away your rightful job.
And it all goes back to how do these people think that things exist? That stuff is here.
How are you going to have stuff?
How do you get stuff? And let's go with basic stuff like food and shelter. This gets brought up, food and shelter. How do you get food and shelter? Where does that come from?
People have to produce it. They got to produce the food.
Someone has to make it.
Someone has to pick the food, cultivate the ground, and they got to combine, or they got to go through and pick the food, whatever. And then someone has to ship it to some type of processing area. Maybe they ship it straight to store, something like that. People at the store have to accept that and put it out on the shelves, and then eventually you can get food.
Let's go back to the 1700s or 1800s, man.
Oh,
forget when humans were still chimpanzees.
Sorry, you grew the food or you starved to death.
Yeah. you actually had to, wake up and get out of bed. And if you wanted to take the day off, sure, you could. You didn't have to ask anybody, but also you weren't going to eat that day.
You needed food.
It blows my mind that people just think that this stuff would just exist. What we have today, if you look around, is the culmination of billions of minds coming together to create all kinds of ideas. And we're now here at this point in history.
It's pretty amazing.
Billions of minds trying all sorts of things, from raping and pillaging to communes, to capitalism, to socialism, to whatever. They've tried all kinds of things. And we have it probably best here in America, basically because of the principles on which this country was founded. That people should be left alone and free to build and create and trade freely, voluntarily.
You're just trading products with one another. And the thing is, if you don't want to take on all that risk on your own, and if you don't specifically make things, what you do is your product becomes your labor and your time that you can spend working for someone else who's going to put in all of that capital, all that risk to build whatever business that is. And this person says something that would go along with what you were saying, only the opposite of it. They say slavery is still here, just in a different form. Instead of working for bread and shelter, you work for just enough money to be able to afford bread and shelter.
How do you get the bread and shelter?
But you don't have enough money to do anything else. Well, if you do, you do. If you are more productive than whatever it costs to get bread and shelter.
God. And as Councilman Yep here said, I don't disagree that slavery's still here, but it's for the government.
Mm-hmm.
You work 3 to 4 months out of the year for free.
Yeah.
Because someone is just taking that money from you.
The other months of the year, you're still bound by all the rules that the government puts on top of you. Your labor is still changed. The productivity of your labor, the value of your labor is still changed by all the things that the government does to intervene in the economy on a daily basis. And that would be the closest thing, other than actual modern day slavery, which still takes place. That would actually be closer, because you can leave your job. And you can go to another job. A slave couldn't be I don't like this plantation. This plantation sucks. I'm going to go to that plantation over there. I'm going to work for that guy. Couldn't do that.
No.
You're owned by that person. Kind of crazy if you think about it.
Very wild.
Well, have you ever thought about slavery before? Man, owning a human being, that's on a different level. I feel bad keeping my cat inside because it always wants to go outside, Cats just want to go explore, and I keep it inside. It tries to get out the door, and I'm like, no, you can't. You can't leave. And I feel bad about that.
But you give it plenty of food and water.
I give it food and water. It's taken care of. It's safe.
Too good for your home, cat?
It's safe. Yeah. I give it everything it needs, except for whatever's outside. That's what it wants. Yeah. It's always curious. But I think curiosity would kill the cat, from what I was told.
Yeah.
And so I keep it inside. A person? And the person's like, hey, I want to go outside. I'm like, no. Good Lord, I can't imagine such a thing.
Yeah.
But that's history. That's how it is.
Yep.
Okay. Working for a corporation is not slavery.
I just want to try these experiments for these people, because you can't you can't like communicate with them in a way where they're going to be like, oh yeah, that makes sense. So I just want to be like, oh yeah, let's try your idea.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do it. No more corporations in whatever. Let's get some land, you know?
Yeah.
And get these people on the land and be like, there's no corporations here. No one telling you that, no one to ask off work from. And they're like, well, where's my house? They're like, oh, you got to build it.
Yeah, you got to build it.
Where's my food?
You'd be like, Ash, I was going to ask you the same question. Where's your house? you better get to work.
Right.
First, you got to make a saw.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, to cut down some trees after you grow them.
Or find some, or, you know, find a way to cut the tree down.
And unfortunately, what these people mean is that they want to not work while other people have to work to provide them with things.
Yeah.
And that just doesn't compute for us or for any other logically minded individual. That was number 7. We're going to begin through numbers 8 and 9 right after we come back. It's a couple doozies. Let me warn you, you don't want to miss them, and then you want to find out who won. And remember, you can find Good Morning Liberty, which is our daily show, on your favorite podcast app. Right now, we are Liberty at Night on the Free Talk Live Network. Coming right back. We're back, Liberty at Night with Nate and Charlie on the Free Talk Live Network, coming at you from Nashville, Tennessee. We are almost to the end of Dumb Bleep of the Week. Wait till the end to see who wins. Number 8 is going to go to Mehdi Hasan. Mehdi Hasan, you remember, he used to be on MSNBC. He's a guy who's known for fact-checking and myth-busting and debunking and stuff like that. Known as a great debater, all that. He ended up getting let go from MSNBC. Because of his, honestly, it was because of his thoughts on the Israel-Gaza conflict. Ended up getting let go. Anyhow, he started a new media company because that's what we needed, was a new media company.
Yeah.
Sure. Let's have all the media companies. Everyone start your own media company. We did it. Why can't they? Go ahead, Mehdi. Anyhow, Zatio is the name of it. A new media company is here and ready to make some noise. Don't worry. This is just a lead up to the dome. This is part of his philosophy for Zatio. He says, I'm now the founder and CEO of Zatio, but I remain a journalist above all else. The guarantee of good journalism and high editorial standards is at the core of everything we will offer to our viewers, listeners, and readers.
So he's taking like the playbook out of Tucker Carlson.
Yeah, basically. Zatio will not back away from the RF or G words.
What does that mean?
He talks about it earlier in this piece as racism, fascism, or genocide.
Okay.
As if now many of the media companies are not going to talk about genocide in Gaza, but it's not as if they don't talk about racism and fascism. Like, that's kind of a main thing that they talk about. We will not both sides issues like climate change, vaccine science, or election denial, and we will not allow the truth to be sacrificed at the altar of lazy neutrality or faux impartiality. So one thing he's saying there is that there are not two sides to the conversation about climate change. There is only one. There's not two sides about vaccine science. There's only one, which if you go back to late 2020, early 2021, and in the time that the vaccine was coming out, remember, there are no two sides. It is 100% effective. There are no side effects. Take it or you should lose your job.
You can't spread the disease. You can't get it if you take the vaccine.
There are not two sides to this issue. Mm-hmm. He is only going to stick to the truth. That's it. So anyhow, he says there's an old adage that's been either ignored or forgotten by far too many in our news media. Quote, if someone says it's raining and another person says it's dry, it's not your job to quote them both. Your job is to look out the effing window and find out which is true. Now,
missed the whole theory of relativity.
Like, raining or dry, that is a pretty yes or no question. Like, you can
no,
look.
No, it's not.
Okay, I know
it's
what you're doing.
Extremely relative.
I know what you're doing, but literally, if you open the window when it's raining, like, you can look and you can see, is it raining or is it not?
I got to tell you, sometimes I leave my house here and it's dry.
Yeah.
And by the time I get to the stop sign at the end of my neighborhood,
it's
raining.
Yeah.
And so someone in my Facebook neighborhood group could be like, oh, it's raining outside. And
you're like, I hate this rain.
I get
rain.
On there, no, it's dry.
I'm sick of rain in Tennessee. And you're like, what are you talking about?
Like, it's raining in our neighborhood. I'm like, no, it's dry in our neighborhood.
Yeah.
I just looked out the fucking window.
And
they're like, well, I just looked out the fucking window too, and it's raining. And so, yeah, there are two sides. in the same neighborhood.
In that case, they're both right.
Exactly. Yeah.
There you go.
Right.
I like it.
Yes. Yes. So what do you do about that?
You have to view things from people's individual perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
Zateo is all about looking out of that window over and over again to seek out the facts, to tell the truth, to ask the tough questions. We are clear-eyed about our role and our mission to be journalists and not stenographers, truth tellers and not gaslighters.
Anyone who tells you they're not gaslighting you, they're definitely gaslighting you. That's okay. Like the telltale sign.
Listen, on the same day, Charlie, that I found this, Mehdi Hassan posts this right here. The ADL. Now, this is a post about how the ADL is going to honor Jared Kushner at its conference next month. The ADL is going to honor the senior White House advisor to the U.S. president who praised neo-Nazis as very fine people, suggested U.S. Jews were loyal to Israel, not America, and engaged in the same rhetoric and conspiracy theories at the Pittsburgh synagogue as the Pittsburgh synagogue mass shooter. I highlighted one very specific thing. Remember all the stuff we just read Mehdi Hassan talking about his new media company.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, he decided to go with the lie, the very fine people lie, which we love referencing. I mean, I said very fine people at the beginning of the show, I'm pretty sure.
Mm-hmm.
I actually thought about making a t-shirt that says very fine people on the front, and on the back it says very fine people. That
so
way,
it's on both sides.
So it says very fine people on both sides. I thought that'd be pretty good.
Yeah. You should do that.
So he goes with this. So what I wanted to do, one more time for you, because Mehdi Hassan, the truth journalist, we have had him on for Dumb Bleep, with not him personally, but we've talked about him because he portrays himself as the truth teller. He is the guy that is not going to mix facts with rhetoric and opinions and all of that. What you get from him is the truth. He's verified it. He's fact-checked it. There's no BS, nothing. And then he goes with this praising neo-Nazis as very fine people argument.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go. Reporter, both sides, sir. You said there was hatred. There was violence on both sides. Trump says, yes, I think there's blame on both sides. If you look at both sides, I think there's blame on both sides. And I have no doubt about it. And you don't have any doubt about it either. And if you reported it accurately, you would say, reporter says, the neo-Nazis started this. They showed up in Charlottesville to protest. Trump, excuse me. They didn't put themselves, and you had some very bad people in that group, but you also had people that were very fine people on both sides. You had people in that group, excuse me, I saw the same pictures as you did. You had people in that group that were there to protest the taking down to them a very, very important statue and the renaming of a park from Robert E. Lee to another name. In this confrontation in Charlottesville, there were actually three groups of people that were there. There were the people in, there were like the anti-fascist, I guess, whatever, protesters that were there.
Yeah.
There were people that were just there to protest the fact that they were taking down the statue. Mm-hmm. And then there were Nazis marching with
which makes
tiki
sense
torches.
Because if you think of like the Illuminati with the pyramid, you know, there's three. Well, there's more than three sides, but at least from one side, it looks like a triangle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So having three groups there makes sense. There's probably an eye in mm-hmm. the middle of all of that somewhere, which is Trump, I think.
He is.
So
he sees everything.
So this is all a ploy by the Illuminati,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Okay.
You know,
I like it.
My guess.
Reporter, George Washington, Robert E. Lee, you're not the same. Trump, George Washington was a slave owner. Was George Washington a slave owner? So will George Washington now lose his statues? Are we going to take down statues of George Washington? How about Thomas Jefferson? What do you think of Thomas Jefferson? You like him? Reporter says, I do love Thomas Jefferson. Ooh, I bet that person's lost his or her job since then. Trump says, okay, good. Are we going to take down the statue because he was a major slave owner? Now, are we going to take down his statue? So you know what? It's fine. You're changing history. You're changing culture. And you had people, and I'm not talking about the neo-Nazis and the white nationalists because they should be condemned totally. But you had many people in that group other than neo-Nazis and white nationalists, okay? And the press has treated them absolutely unfairly. That was how many lines after? I mean, there was another paragraph he said from the very fine people on both sides argument. where he says,
and before he said fine people, he started off by saying, go back one. He said, you had some very bad people in that group.
Yeah.
That's what he first said.
He did.
And he said, but you also had people that were very fine people.
Mm-hmm.
On both sides.
Then he says, I'm not talking about the neo-Nazis and the white nationalists because they should be condemned totally, but you have many people in the group other than neo-Nazis and white nationalists.
And what's amazing is how many times he had to say, excuse me, because the reporter kept interrupting him.
This has actually been one of the reasons that we ended up like defending Trump so much to what the media was doing, because this was such a blatant lie where you have a transcript of the conversation. There's probably a video of the conversation. I haven't found the video, but you have a transcript of a conversation where he literally says that he's not talking about the neo-Nazis and white nationalists. And then he says they should be condemned totally. Not only did they go with the very fine people lie after this, they repeatedly said that Trump refused to condemn neo-Nazis and white nationalists for years after this. Mm-hmm. They said that he refused to condemn neo-Nazis and white nationalists, as if this had just been redacted from the official reports mm-hmm. of what happened that day. And all of them were just choosing to ignore it because they wanted to portray. Do you know how many people actually believe this? He said that neo-Nazis were very fine people, or that he said that some of the neo-Nazis were very fine people.
About half the country.
Yeah. I am all for criticizing Trump. I refuse to vote for him two times, and I'll do the third, unless he's in prison, in which case we said we would vote for him if he was in prison.
Why do you say we?
Didn't you say you would?
I might vote for him anyway.
Oh, my God. I don't know yet.
So far, I'm uncommitted.
It depends on who the Libertarian Party nominee is.
So far, I'm uncommitted. If you were to take my vote right now, it'd
uncommitted.
It'd be neither of these, actually, if I had that choice.
None of these candidates.
None of these candidates. And then my second choice would be, like, if we were doing ranked choice voting, none of these candidates, and then uncommitted, and then probably Trump.
Yeah.
You know, and then we'll go down from there.
And you would just cross out Biden's name, and then they would count that one.
Yeah.
Right there.
Now, he's talking about Antifa in the other group, by the way. He continues on and says, now, in the other group also, you had some fine people, but you also had some troublemakers. And you see them come with the black outfits and with the helmets, Antifa, and with the baseball bats, Antifa. You had a lot of bad people in the other group.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he's trying to... The dude called it pretty accurately.
He called it like it was.
He might as well have been a commentator.
And this has been one of the biggest, most persistent lies about him. Heck, Joe Biden said that this was the reason he got in the election in 2020 in the first place, was Trump's response to what happened in Charlottesville. Mm. And it was all based on a lie, the whole thing. And for Mehdi Hasan to come out with a new media company that's just... all just, they're so good and they're so truthful and no one else is telling you the truth. And we're going to come to portray yourself in that way and then still be portraying one of the biggest lies of Trump's presidency and one of the easiest lies to fact check is crazy annoying to me.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Number nine.
I'm not saying Jared Kushner's a good guy.
No, I don't care anything about Jared Kushner in that post at all. Joy Reid gets dumb bleep number nine is the last one. We have nine dumb bleeps. This is a post where she goes on a rant. Now, this is after the Alabama IVF ruling, which we haven't talked about. I kept waiting for a good time that you were going to be here to talk about that because it was an abortion conversation. But they, after the IVF ruling, and this is what she has to say about people who think that we need more babies to be born in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And like that it's a big deal that like we have, that we stop killing babies and that we have more people born, you know? So this is what she says.
The United States has a population of north of 327 million people. Why do we need more kids? Are you saying the state of Alabama needs more kids? Why does the state of Alabama need more kids? More kids for what? There was a time when the state of Alabama absolutely needed more kids because, you know, Alabama was a slave state. Are you saying the state of Alabama needs more kids because you think that those populations will include people who are maybe destitute and desperate enough if you kick out the immigrants like a lot of y'all want to do and you can make them do the work that the migrants are doing now? Because that kind of sounds slavery-ish.
What?
Okay, there's a couple things.
What is she even saying right now?
There's a couple different things here. The slavery-ish part, first off, I guess we could say is really funny. At the end, of, she creates a straw man argument in the middle of in this 45-second clip, and then tries to destroy the straw man argument that she created. This is actually a perfect example of a straw man argument. And that I realized that last night when I watched the video, because she creates the situation. She says, are you saying that you want to have people that are destitute and desperate, and then you want to kick out all the immigrants, and then you want to have a large group of people who are impoverished and destitute so you can get them to do whatever kind of work that you want them to, that you want them to do? Because that's kind of slavery-ish. But no, they didn't say that. You just said that. Right then,
yeah,
you built up that argument and then responded to your own argument saying that that was kind of slavery-ish. You know, no one else said that. That's not the case. So that's a perfect example of someone building a straw man and then attacking that argument afterwards. Mm. That was a really, really good one there. First part is, why do we need more kids? Why do we need more people? We already have 330 million people. Mm. We don't need more people, Charlie. Yeah. That's not a thing.
Kill all the babies.
Actually, we got too many, yeah. You know? Why don't we get rid of some of them? That's, especially for someone.
So then, but by the way, so then what she's saying is the Alabama Supreme Court ruling is working because these IVF, these medical centers have shut down their IVF.
There actually would be less kids.
So now there's going to be less kids.
So why are you worried about it?
So what, I feel like.
That's another disconnect in the argument.
Her plan is working.
Another big disconnect in the argument for sure. By the way, the population does matter, and the birth rate does matter. Elon Musk talks about this a lot. The birth rate is one of the really big things. Japan's got a big issue right now. Their birth rate is just completely collapsed. They have a very old population, and they don't have new people. Now the problem is, now, this is not a system that we specifically would advocate for, but it's the system we have. Say you have a system like Social Security and Medicare, where the new generations have take on the burden of paying for the older generations when they get into a retirement age. Yeah. If you are going to rely on a system like that, you absolutely have to have a higher birth rate. Like, you have to have more people. Because one of our biggest issues we have right now is that our birth rate has collapsed also. And we have a gigantic Ponzi scheme called Social Security that needs more people paying into it.
And Medicare.
To support the older generations. And Medicare that needs more people paying into it that aren't using it. Like, that's a really big thing. And as your birth rate is going down and your population is getting older and older and your younger generations are smaller and smaller, the tax burden on that generation has to get larger and larger if you're going to keep those systems that you have in place.
All the while, the expense of the systems are going up astronomically.
Mm-hmm. And then at the same, so you're either going to tax it away, you're going to have to raise taxes because you have fewer people, which is going to decrease productivity, is going to destroy, or you're going to inflate the currency, print more currency to try and pay for these people, which is going to make it much harder on the younger generations too. Like, newer, bigger generations is actually a really important thing.
The while creating the desperate people enough to do the brick laying jobs.
Yes. Listen, I'm on her side, but she's not.
It's a great Milton Friedman quote.
That one. I read up a lot on birth rate problems. It's basically what we just said. The replacement level fertility is 2.1. And I think right now, what is it? 1.6 is what it says. I don't know how recent this article came out, but 1.6, it would need to be up at 2.1. And when you have mass, like the baby boomer generation, like when you have these massive generations coming into retirement, we're about to go through a massive economic shift with the biggest generation all of a sudden leaving the workforce and relying on the young people that are still in the workforce to pay for all their stuff. You know, I mean that literally. If they're going to be living off of Social Security and they're going to be surviving off of Medicare, they're going to be relying on us and younger people to pay for all their stuff. And so it's absolutely important that you keep your birth rate higher. Or, I mean, aside from all of the other factors like societal, cultural, stuff like that, Or you could just get rid of those programs. You could just do that. That's the other option that would just get rid of all the arguments that I'm making right now. But Joy Reid would not be in favor of getting rid of all of those programs, obviously. Mm-hmm. So if she wants all of those programs, then she should try to see if her brain has the capacity to understand why it would be important to have new, younger, bigger generations to pay for those things. I am curious as to whether or not she has the mental capability to understand what we're saying right now. And if she does, I recommend that she try to do it. But I'm not sure she does. Mm. I'm no scientist or anything like that.
Definitely not.
No.
Yeah.
Okay, those are the double bleeps.
We have one more double bleep.
We do? What's that?
Yeah, take your hat off.
No.
Take your hat off,
Nate. No, I'm not taking my hat off on the show.
Take your hat off on the show.
No.
Show us your hair. The people want to see your hair.
Do that.
You want to see my hair?
Not taking my hat off on the show.
All right.
Well, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it for at least 2 months.
Then we don't have, that's the last dumb bleep.
I'm not going to do it.
Oh, man.
All right, everyone, put your, get your votes in.
Do it. Do get it your for votes the people, in. Nate.
Number one is Nina Turner. Number for anyone who doesn't know, I went to my neighbor for a haircut because he said he cuts hair. And he does, in fact, cut hair. Like, my hair was cut afterwards. All of them. But he took the buzzer, started by my ear, and he went across the top of my head afterwards. And then I had to sit there and not call him bad names for like 20 minutes after that. Because what are you going to do at that point? Put it back. No, you can't do that.
Nate has a full-on buzz cut that I haven't seen.
You saw it.
I'm saying I haven't seen since like you were 16.
No, I've never had it this short.
Yes, you have.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Maybe.
Able to style my hair. I was always able to do, this is so short and I am enough Asian that it just sticks up. It doesn't lay forward. It doesn't lay back. It's just up. It's never been that short since I was a child.
Yeah.
A small child.
Yeah. If I could draw the mental picture for y'all, it was glorious. I've seen you with that haircut before.
No, you haven't.
Maybe you were 14 or something. 12?
Uh-uh. It's never been this short.
I don't know.
Mm-mm. I've had it really short. I used to do the forward with the front spiked up thing,
yeah.
You know, that kind of thing, but it was much longer than this when I did that. Number one is Nina Turner. Number two was that doing public health alone post. Number three is Clyburn saying the Biden gaffes are because of a stutter. Number four is the Russian election interference. Number five is the Trump tariffs. Number six is Taylor the Wrens. Number seven is the slavery modernized. Number eight was Mehdi Hasan. And number nine was Joy Reid. Everyone get your votes in while Charlie's telling you how you can get your money in to the show if you wanted to.
Actually, not anymore, because I don't care what people do.
Oh, okay.
So
yeah,
they can share the show or not, or go visit the links in the show notes, whatever, whatever, whatever. Yeah.
Okay.
Or pick up some of Nate's shirts that he designed, slaved over. Actually, one thing they can do for free is go check out some of our episodes and stuff on YouTube.
They can.
That would be nice.
The full length episodes.
Yes.
Or the clips, but not the shorts. We don't. Listen, the shorts are full right now. If we were doing surge pricing, we'd be charging so much for shorts right now.
Mm-hmm. That's right. In fact, we might be selling shorty shorts.
Yeah, we might be. You know? Guys, we went from getting like nothing, not much on YouTube to by the end of this weekend, we'll have 2 million views in the last 2 weeks or so on YouTube. And I mean, that's pretty cool, but it's not counting towards our watch time hours leading. It's not allowing us to open up the gates to get monetized unless we have 10 million views on shorts, which I'm going to try and do.
In 90 days, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to try and get 10 million. So go watch this episode. I know you already listened to the whole thing if you're listening to us right now. But listen, it's way better if you watch it. So go back and watch it. And the whole thing, three times to understand it fully.
Yeah,
and take go ahead notes. And do that.
take notes. And then when you watch it, yeah, by the fifth time you watch it, you might have a basic understanding of the level of knowledge and intelligence that Nathaniel Paul Thurston comes to the show with.
We need a tiebreaker. It's down. We've whittled it down. Ranked choice voting wise down to the top two It's either going to be Russian election interference or it's going to be Taylor Lorenz. I'm surprised the Russian election interference was ranking that
high.
I
like the Mehdi Hasan.
Yeah, that was actually my favorite one, but it's not going as well. Taylor Lorenz is the winner.
All right.
Taylor and Kaya.
It's always the popular girls that win.
I know.
You know?
Jeez, girls, they get everything.
They do.
All right, everyone, if you enjoyed tonight's episode, make sure you find our daily podcast on your favorite podcast app. Look for Good Morning Liberty, although on Tuesday nights on the Free Talk Live Network, we go by Liberty at Night. You can always find us here, find us on the Free Talk Live podcast channel every Tuesday as well. But if you want to listen to myself and Charlie every single day of the week, then go find Good Morning Liberty on your favorite podcast app. Until next Tuesday, everyone have a great week and a great weekend. Be good. We will see you and talk to you soon.
If you want to move to the free state and you're looking for some real estate, well, I know a guy who's really great. It's the Realtor Mark Warden.
Now you can learn more about the awesome things happening here in New Hampshire in our march toward liberty in our lifetime. Our friends at Porcupine Real Estate are hosting a series of webinars to educate you on the expanded freedoms enjoyed by New Hampshire citizens. Reserve your seat today at move.freetalklive.com. Topics include gun freedom, medical freedom, and political freedom victories. They also have a couple on best practices for moving to the free state and finding housing. These webinars are super helpful and free to attend once you've registered at move.freetalklive.com. Visit their YouTube channel, Porcupine Real Estate, for videos from past presentations and sign up for upcoming webinars for free at move.freetalklive.com.
PorcupineRealEstate.com.